Good Tuesday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler and our remote broadcast sponsor as well, Adcor Defense. Want to thank Adcor for joining us here on NRA News Cam and Company. I am very excited that they are our on-location sponsor throughout 2016. And we'll be talking with the folks from Nosler and Adcor because we're here at SHOT Show 2016 in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we welcome you to our coverage all week long. Heck, depending on the snowstorm in Washington, D.C., it might be part of next week, too. We'll keep our eyes on the weather back east. But I got to tell you, there's a lot to look at here at SHOT Show in the Sands Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we have a fantastic program for you today, scheduled a four-hour program. Arlie Ermey, host of Gunny Time with Arlie Ermey on Outdoor Channel. Tom Gresham, the host of Gun Talk, will be with us. And Jim Liberator from Outdoor Sportsman Group. You know, they are responsible for Outdoor Channel, Sportsman Channel, the World Fishing Network. We're going to talk with our friend Ron Bellin, former Navy SEAL with Reaper Outdoors. We had a chance to catch up with Ron the day we rolled into town here on Sunday. Also, Annette Wachter, the 30 Cal gal, will be with us in hour two. Juliana Crowder, the founder of A Girl and a Gun Club. Major Ed Polito of Folds of Honor Foundation will join us as well. Chip Eberhard of Top Shot Academy, one of the stars of the Freedom Safest Place campaign. Scott Laseth, the sporting chef at Sportsman Channel, will join us on the program as well. Mark Willis, country star extraordinaire, will join us in hour three. Plus, we're going to get to all of the day's top Second Amendment stories. And look what I just got. A challenge coin from Mr. Arlie Ermey. How are you, Gunny?
Greetings, Cam.
It's good to see you.
We're going to have to quit following around one another around like this. Everything is great. I couldn't have written a better script. This is phenomenal.
Well, you look fantastic. It's great to see you, sir.
Feel good. I'm healthy, and as long as I'm healthy, I'll continue to march.
Right. Well, listen, I don't know how you do everything that you do, because you are an extraordinarily busy guy. I want to talk about the show Gunny Time. And I also, I don't know how many questions you've been asked about this since the new Star Wars movie came out. Adam Driver, former Marine, one of the stars of Star Wars, has given a couple of interviews where he's talked about what an inspiration you are to him. Have you actually had a chance to talk with Adam Driver yet?
I haven't. You know, I admire his work. I root for anybody who can go in the Marine Corps, do well in the Marine Corps, come out of the Marine Corps, and do well in this industry. I'm all for it. I support him 100%.
Do we need more Marines in Hollywood?
I think we have a lot of Marines. You'd be surprised who in Hollywood's been in the Marine Corps.
Really?
Oh, there's been some decent people. I'll tell you, there's a book out.
Yeah.
Actually, that has who's famous, who's famous that's been in the Marine Corps. And you'd be surprised who's in that book.
You're in that book.
I probably am, I would imagine. But, you know, it's a heck of a transition. You come out of the Marine Corps after 4, 5, 10, 15 years, whatever it is, in the Marine Corps, and can actually make the transition into this industry. It's not something that's a normal thing that we do. Normally, Marines go out and be cops. You know, we'll be police officers or we'll be firemen it seems like we want to protect and serve.
You know?
So we'll usually end up in that protect and serve industry, which I support 100%. And these guys have a hard job. I support law enforcement as much as I possibly can. Their job, that's got to be the toughest job in America. But when somebody can actually come out of the Marine Corps and go to film school and actually be in Star Wars?
Right.
Come on. I mean, that's a big step in the right direction.
Well, I'm telling you, I think you need to reach out to him because, you know, they are making another one, Gunny. And I'm just saying, there's probably a role for you in the next Star Wars movie.
You just never know. You never can tell. Right now, I'm thinking Toy Story 4, you know, because now we're starting to, I've been approached by different various people from Pixar and Disney, and we are actually, they're talking pretty heavy about Toy Story 4.
Really?
Yeah, so that could be... That could be interesting, couldn't it?
Yes, indeed. My kids are going to be very excited to hear that news.
Absolutely. I mean, that could be the only show that I've ever done that's suitable for children.
Well, it's good that you have one, right? At least one.
Yes. Yeah, one that my children could watch when they were young. You
exactly,
know?
Right?
You that's what Dad does for a living. Okay, he just disappears for long periods of time, and then all of a sudden he comes back, and he's got a pocket full of money, and he can afford to educate me and all this. But I wonder how he does that, because they never were allowed to watch the movies that I was in. Not that they were pornographic or anything, but the language.
Age appropriate, right?
Age appropriate. There you go. Certainly. Yeah. Absolutely. Marine Corps stuff, you know, I was always, seems to me like about 90% of the time I was the bad guy.
Right. And you don't want your kids watching you be the bad guy on screen.
No, the bad guy normally has the dirty mouth, too, on top of that, you know? And I seldom swear. I when I'm at home... the worst thing that would come out of my mouth would be darn if I hit my thumb with a hammer or something, you know. But, and I've got six children, and the reason I have six is because the first five, by the way, were girls. And I am not a quitter. And I had to have my hunting and fishing buddy, and my girls are girls. They, oh, yuck, a worm. Daddy, will you put this on my hook for me? I'll take the girls fishing, and I would never get a fish because I'm too busy taking fish off the hook and putting worms on hooks. And so it kind of spoiled it for me.
I don't know how I lucked out, but my youngest daughter, who's 10, wants to be a taxidermist. How about that?
Now, that's pretty honorable.
Right? I mean, she loves, and she is, man, there's nothing too gory or gross for her. She'll get in there and... So I don't know. I don't know how I lucked out, but I lucked out. Well, it is, and I lucked out that we've got you here. Let's talk about Gunny Time on Outdoor Channel. What is, you know? Look, for folks who watched Bill Call and all of your other TV shows, we talked about Gunny Time. I think the last time you were on the show, and you were really proud of what you're able to do on this show because you're able to. Do all of the cool camera work. You're able to shoot a lot of great guns. Are you still having fun with it?
It's a beautiful thing when a man can have a job that he can't wait to get out of bed in the morning so he go to work. Isn't that cool? Now, you've got a job, Cam. Come on. You love your job.
I do.
You love what you do. But there are so many people. A car will pick me up and take me to the studio or take me to the location where we're shooting at. And as I'm driving along, I'm looking out the window of my car, the town car, and I'm seeing all these long faces. And these are guys driving to work. They're going to some thankless job that, you know, they actually have to work. It's not fun for them, but they have to have the paycheck. That's the important thing, is the paycheck. But for me, I just can't wait to get to work so I can go shoot the guns and drive the tanks and fly the airplanes. And my philosophy is, if you can't drive it, fly it, or shoot it, we blow it up, you know? So we just go have fun. And with Gunny Time, we have the new episodes coming on, I think that's July.
Okay.
Well, and on the Outdoor Channel in July, we'll have the new Gunny Time episodes, and they're going to be fun. Trust me.
That is awesome. So are you currently filming these, or will you be filming these coming up here?
We're getting geared up right now.
Okay.
We've got our crew. We're pretty loyal with our crews. These guys have busted their butts for us, and they've gone the extra mile, and we've been in snow, and we've been in cold weather and miserable weather shooting, and these guys are always right there for us. So I'm loyal to them as well. So we always try to get the same guys back every year. And basically we have the same crews coming back this year as well as last year. So for me, it's like I know all the guys. It's me and the guys. I always work it out where I get to shoot the guns, the machine guns, and drive the tanks and everything. But I always try to work it out where the guys get, after we finish shooting,
right,
we save enough ammo leftovers where the crew can actually come and shoot the guns and actually have a little fun, too. So I think it's only fair.
Absolutely. We do the same thing. Actually, when we go out and we do a segment called At the Range, where we go to the NRA range, and we take people shooting, we do an interview.
I've seen it.
Love to have you as one of our guests. But I learned very early on that if we didn't block out enough time for the guys who are, you know, really doing all of the hard work to get to have a little fun and to put some ammo down range, they got a little cranky.
You got to save some ammo and a couple of watermelons for the guys. That's the thing, you know. And we've got some female camera people and crew, and the girls love it just as much as the guys do. And that's one thing about our what we do. I compete high-powered rifle. I like vintage military categories where I M1 Garand is my baby.
Okay.
But it's one thing that men, we don't have a special firing line for the girls. You know, the ladies compete right along with the men,
mm-hmm.
and it's an equal sport. And I think that's one of the things that really intrigued the ladies. You know, the national champion for the last 4 years has been a female Army soldier. So, you know, hey, golf, they have their little special tee box moved
right.
way up there. not for shooting, no, sir. And I do consider shooting. And I'm walking down the firing line at Camp Perry, and I'm on the firing line, and I feel so safe. I think it's the safest place that I could be in the world is right there on that firing line, because everybody on that firing line, first and foremost in their mind is safety.
Mm-hmm.
The most dangerous place, of course, would be Interstate 5 in California, I would imagine. But I feel safe and secure when I'm on the firing line at a rifle range. I really do. Or pistol range.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, look, education and training is so important. We've got folks who are, they may call themselves gun safety advocates, but really they're anti-gun. They're the ones who are still pushing the gun bans. They're still pushing the gun control laws. And to me, if you are a gun safety advocate, if that's really what you're about, you want people to have that opportunity to get educated, to get trained, to be competent and responsible with a firearm. If you've got people who are trying to shut down ranges or trying to prevent ranges from opening up, you can't be a gun safety advocate. At that point, you're just simply anti-gun.
No, I'm a firm believer that, hey, I'll tell you what, if Trump becomes our next president, I'll guarantee you one thing, our Second Amendment rights are solid as a rock. Now, Donnie Trump is on my shooting team.
Is he really?
That's Donald Trump's son, yes.
Oh,
indeed.
Wow.
And he is a heck of a shot, too. He lays down on that 600-yard line, and, man, he puts them in the black every time. So, but I like to think that our Second Amendment rights are solid and good, and the NRA, I'm a board member of the NRA, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pretty much I stay abreast of what's going on. What we need to do is enforce the laws that are on the doggone books right now. And there's plenty. There's thousands of gun laws on the books. All we have to do is enforce those gun laws, and we're fine.
You know, and it's interesting because I just saw a story today. It was a local story out of Delaware. 71% of gun charges were dropped in Delaware. You know, you talk about enforcing the laws on the books, and in some cases it may be that they were dropped because there were bigger charges that they went after, and so they dropped the gun charge and the plea deal. But there were also plenty of cases where, you know, you've got career criminals who the gun charge gets dropped, they plead to a simple robbery as opposed to an armed robbery, and they're back out onto the streets, you know, in a matter of a short period of time when they should be, you know, behind bars. And I think what you're talking about is absolutely true. And, you know, I think we are at a point in this country where more and more Americans are thinking about their right to keep and bear arms. And they're not necessarily interested in an additional, you know, any hindrance to the exercise of that right. They want to be able to protect themselves and their loved ones.
Well, you have to understand, too, I mean, many of our board members with the NRA and many of our members at the NRA are liberals. Come on. I mean, so you know, it's not just a conservative thing.
It's an American thing.
It's an American thing. So I just can't. We need to keep guns out of the hands of wrongdoers. That's what we need to do. And I don't have a problem with. I'm in California, so we have the most rigid gun laws of any state that we have. And still, and yet, somehow, these people that shouldn't have guns are getting a hold of guns. And they buy them off the street. Trust me, they don't go to the gun shows and buy a bolt-action gun that they're going to go into a school or, you know, a populated area where it says, no guns allowed here. You know, that's...
Right.
The thing is, we need to keep guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have guns. Felons, gang members, things of that nature. People that are mentally challenged. But if we could do that, then it would be a very civilized world, and we wouldn't have anybody talking about more gun laws.
Talking with Arlie Ermey, Gunny Time with Arlie Ermey again, coming out again with new episodes in July. On Outdoor Channel, we're almost out of time for this segment, Arlie, but I got to ask, have you had a chance to walk the floor here at SHOT at all? Have you had a chance to see inside yet?
You know, I've been to a million gun shows, and I've never seen one. So I work with Glock, you know, so I'll go from here. I'll go directly to the Glock booth and hang out with Glock for the rest of the day. So the only way that I really get to see the gun shows is a lot of times I'll come early in the morning before the doors open up, and they'll let me come in and I can walk around and see some of the new stuff. And it's interesting. This, the SHOT Show, let's face it, this is the largest show of its kind anywhere in the world. I think Las Vegas, the reason we're in Las Vegas, because it's the only convention center that's large enough to hold this show. And even though I watch it grow every year, and I've been, let's see, 14 consecutive years I've been to this gun show now. 14 consecutive years.
Wow.
And the thing is, now we're getting to the point where not only do we fill up the convention center, we're building tents outside too. So this convention center is gonna be obsolete. We're gonna have to start building bigger convention centers to hold this show.
Right. Well, and you know, NRA annual meeting is the same way. Nashville took over the convention center and spilled out onto the street outside. And now I'm really looking forward to Louisville in May. It's going to be another fantastic annual meeting, I think.
Now, can you imagine if they were, if somehow these idiots were able to infringe on our Second Amendment and put these gun shows and mom and pop gun shops out of business and the ammo companies out of business? Can you imagine the unemployment situation that we'd be faced with in this country? I mean, there are gazillions of little gun shops all over this country.
Absolutely.
That would be just literally put out of business. And I'm not an advocate of putting people on the welfare lines. So trust me, we need to get them off the welfare lines.
Absolutely. Listen, Arlie Ermey, I really appreciate you coming by. I hope that I have a chance to go by the Glock booth and see you in a little bit as well.
You need to come over and say hello. Just come right up to the front of the line and say hey.
I'm not going to be a line cutter. I'll wait my turn. But listen,
there's usually 2 or 3 hour lines.
I know, brother. Listen, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it, and I love the fact that we're kicking off our SHOT Show coverage with you, sir.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Cam. It's always something I look forward to every time I come to the show. We got to get together. You know that.
Right, absolutely. Arlie Ermey, thank you so much.
Semper Fi, God bless.
Thank you, sir. Arlie
Ermey. Second Amendment.
Joining us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Why don't we take our first time out here from the 2016 Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show, SHOT Show 2016. When we come back, Tom Gresham of Gun Talk will join us. He is standing by. We'll talk with Tom momentarily, so stick around. We're just getting started here from Las Vegas, Nevada, and the 2016 SHOT Show.
Speaking with Bethany Mullen with NRA Community Outreach about the NRA Refuse to Be a Victim program, tell us, Bethany, what's the program all about?
Well, Refuse to Be a Victim is a crime prevention and a personal safety program. It was created in 1993 by the women of the NRA. It was created specifically for people who didn't feel comfortable carrying firearms, but they still wanted to take a proactive role in their safety. It was women only from 93 to 97, but now it's open up to everybody since people realize that regardless of whether or not you do carry a firearm, there are situations that you want to be aware of so you can stay safe in your everyday life.
So this is a very successful program for NRA. Why was it important that NRA offer a program like this?
Just for people that, like I said, didn't feel comfortable carrying a firearm but still wanted to create a safety plan for themselves. It's really comprehensive. It goes over a whole bunch of different things. It's a four-hour seminar format. It goes over personal safety, travel security, home security, cybersecurity, a whole bunch more. Everyone that attends a seminar does get a comprehensive safety handbook with a lot of stuff that can't even be covered in the 4 hours. And it's just a lot of good tips that you can...
Speaking with Mike Christensen with Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Mike, welcome back to NRA News. You've got something neat going on for the new year, the 2016 Gun a Week drawing. What is it all about?
John, this is one of our big fundraisers for the year. Beginning the first Wednesday in March, we're going to give away a gun every week for 52 weeks. At the end of those 52 weeks, everybody who didn't win a gun will go into a drawing. And then we also take all of the winners and put them in a drawing. So somebody is guaranteed to win two guns out of this drawing.
Two guns. That sounds like a good deal. So this is for Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Let's tell folks what it is that you guys do.
John, we're working to give kids who don't have a chance to get outdoors that opportunity. We're taking kids who are served by organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters and other youth mentoring organizations, an opportunity to get out, learn to hunt and fish and shoot, and enjoy the great outdoors that we all know and love.
That is so awesome. So how do folks get involved in this drawing?
They can go to outdoormentors.org and click on the Gun a Week drawing link on the front page and get signed up right there.
That is so good. Before we run out of time, once again, it's a 2016 Gun a Week drawing. Tickets are available now. Start drawing first Wednesday in March. And Mike, I got about 30 seconds left. Tell folks why it's so important to get involved with an organization like yours. Why do you do what you do?
There are too many kids today who are never going to have a chance to go hunting and fishing unless those of us who love the outdoors step up and make that happen. And that's what outdoor mentoring is all about.
All right. Once again, it's the 2016 Gun a Week drawing. Tickets available now. How do folks get those tickets again, Mike?
Outdoormentors.org. Click on the link right there on the front page.
All right. So you're starting the drawing first Wednesday in March. Go there now and get information and find out more information about this great group, Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Mike Christensen, thank you, sir, for what you do, and thank you for being on NRA News. You have a good one.
Welcome back to NRA News. Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler and our on-location sponsor, Adcor Defense. Take a look at the Hoover Dam. Had a chance to check out Hoover Dam yesterday after a media day in Boulder City at the SHOT Show. And that was my first media day. We're joined by Tom Gresham of Gun Talk. And can you believe it? I think this is 11 years for me at SHOT Show, but I'm always doing the show.
Have you been missing your wake-up call? What's going
on
here?
I'm always on the air. I can't go out there. I'm back in time. And
excuses.
Yesterday was our setup day.
How awesome is the media day?
Oh, it was incredible. It was amazing.
You get to go out there and shoot new guns and use OPA, other people's ammo.
Right?
I mean, it was pretty cool. There's some really neat new stuff. Talk about a vibrancy and a growth and an excitement in the firearms industry. And if there ever was a total repudiation President Obama's calls for gun control, it's in the growth of shooting and self-defense and guns and the expansion of it throughout actually all demographics of the United States.
You know, and it's interesting because I think you're absolutely right about this. You know, people talk about, kind of joke about Obama being the greatest gun salesman in history. But what I think the president's actions have done over the last couple of years, he's gotten people thinking about their right to keep and bear arms. You know, I've seen so many stories, particularly after the attack in San Bernardino, of people who had gone to a gun store in California, in San Bernardino, and had bought their very first firearm. But it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision, Tom. This was something that they had been thinking about for a while.
It had been percolating for a while.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, they're not going, it's not panic buying. They're not running out, give me whatever gun you got, I'm going to go put on a shelf somewhere in case, you know, all hell breaks loose. They want training. They want education. They want to be competent.
You know, and not to take away his title as the greatest gun salesman of all time, but I don't think President Obama actually gets credit for this. What I'm seeing is more and more people are buying guns, not because they're afraid of some action by Obama, but they're looking at it very logically. They look at San Bernardino and they say, look, the police did a fabulous job. They were there in 4 minutes, but in 4 minutes, 14 people died. So they do the math and they go, actually, the real critical factor here is time. Do we want to have to call somebody on the phone and say, please bring a gun here to stop this guy? Or we would rather have some reaction in seconds rather than in minutes. And they're pretty logical. People have a pretty good BS filter. And they said, you know, I think I don't want to wait for somebody to bring a gun to stop a crazy person. So it's like you say, they've been thinking about it for a while, and then a San Bernardino crystallizes that thinking for them. And so they're out there, they're buying guns. What, concealed carry classes are booked months in advance.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, I'm in rural Virginia now, and our local FFL is also a gas station and a barbecue stand.
I love it.
It's fantastic. And I was in there a couple of weeks ago, and they had their sign-up sheet for a concealed carry course.
Right.
It was about half full, and it was coming up this weekend. I said, you guys only half full? He said, no, this is the second class. We had to add a second class because we filled up our first one. I kind of thought everybody in my area already had their concealed carry license.
That's an interesting point. You think, okay, we've already reached everybody who's going to carry a gun.
Right.
Not even close.
No.
No. And the more people talk about it, the more people analyze it and go, you know, we know what a lot of this is. I know you know the numbers on this, but a third of the people getting their carry permits now are women. And a third of the new handgun warranty cards are being registered by women. Women are tired of being patted on the head and said, there, little lady, that's okay, we're going to take care of you, don't you worry about this. And they're going, no, I'm going to take care of me, and I'm going to take care of my kids, and I know that no one else is going to do it other than me.
Well, and, you know, going back to President Obama for a second, at that CNN event, when Kimberly Congdon from Colorado, you know, brought up the issue of carrying a firearm, and he ended up saying, like, well, you know, I they're just... Studies say it's kind of dangerous for you to have a gun around, and you know, I'm not sure you can really use it. Like, he took great pains to say, listen, I'm not anti-gun. I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm just not sure that owning a gun and using it for self-defense is really practical. Telling somebody who has been sexually assaulted that, you know, I'm just not sure that I'll be the one to decide.
I want to say, would you be able to say that to one of your daughters, Mr. President, if she had been raped? That, no, we're not going to provide any protection. She gets no Secret Service protection, and we're going to make it impossible for her to protect herself. Are you comfortable with that, Mr. President? Nobody wants to go there.
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, we do have candidates, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. Bernie's trying to claim that he's... Listen, I'm just as anti-gun as Hillary Clinton is,
no,
right?
No, I hate the NRA more than you do. The NRA hates me more. No, the NRA hates me more. Really, guys? Really? Who told them that this was a winning strategy?
I'm guessing inside the Beltway political consultants.
In the echo chamber in there. You know, do they not remember 1994 when Bill Clinton's gun ban cost the Democrats control of Congress? Are they not just marching down that same road again?
I got to say, Tom, I really think that they are. And, you know, look, you and I both know, I think our audience knows, that the right to keep and bear arms, it's not a right of Republicans. It's not a conservative right. It's a right of all Americans. And I want both major political parties. I want all the minor ones, too, to be on board with that. I think we win when it's a non-issue, frankly.
On Gun Talk Radio, I will not let people talk about liberals and conservatives. I don't go there because I say, look, understand that a certain percentage, and I think it's 10-20% of people who self-identify as liberals, are very strong on the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
We can't afford to throw away 10 or 20% by alienate them and going into the liberal conservative. No.
And about a third of self-described Democrats are the same way.
Yes, exactly. So what we need to talk about is people who support the Second Amendment. To your point, anytime, like the president does, someone starts with, well, of course, I support the Second Amendment, but what that means is, no, I don't support the Second Amendment.
Exactly. So we're here at SHOT Show 2016. It is packed, as always. This thing gets bigger and bigger every year. This is now 5 floors worth of events and show space. I mean, they're gonna run out of hotel here before long.
60,000 to 65,000 people and like 14 protesters, if you could find them.
I was gonna say I didn't even see them. I don't know. I think they would get lost around here.
Yeah,
but
no kidding.
I mean, it looks like it is gonna be another amazing week. Is there anything on your short list that you just have to see, have to check out?
At the media day yesterday, when we were out at the range and shooting, there are some very cool things. Kimber breaks ground by bringing out a revolver. Brand new for them.
Yeah.
I got to shoot it.
I did not get to shoot it, but we were talking with some folks, and that's what they were saying. Like, on the bus ride over, there was kind of a little bit of joking about it. Kimber's coming out of the revolver, but nobody was joking on the way back.
No. Things shot really well. It's a six-shot, .357 Magnum. Concealed carry. It's a small revolver. Really nice. SIG bringing back the P225 single stack 9, very nice. Bringing in, SIG is actually going to make the famous P210, which was made in Germany, very expensive, $2,500 for this pistol, now made in America for $1,000 less. You know, got Smith & Wesson's got the ported shield. Springfield Armory has XDM, and they've got the EMP, the little bitty 1911, now in a 4-inch barrel. You just went from booth to booth to booth. New, of all things, Ruger now making silencers. Talk about mainstream and silencers.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the guns that I got to shoot was a smaller company. I think it was Witt Machines. And they had an integrated suppressed AR. And I think it was 300 Blackout. And I walked away going, okay, I want one. Yeah, it was awesome.
My list was full when I said, want one. Yeah.
I know, right?
I know.
So is there a trend this year, or is the industry now so big that we've got multiple trends going on?
I'm just
going
to say, we have a lot of different threads running here. Suppressors are huge. If there was any logic to our laws, you'd be able to get a suppressor that's hanging on a pegboard at Home Depot because it's just a muffler.
Right.
You know, I mean, so suppressors are huge. What's happened is when that 1939 law was passed, $200 tax was huge because you could buy a suppressor for like $5.
Mm-hmm.
Now the suppressor is $600 to $1,000, and the $200 is going, yeah, okay, fine, we'll do that. So suppressors are huge. Concealed carry continues to be the gateway for so many people. They get their permit, they start shooting, they discover they like it. Men and women, they go, wow, this is very cool. Then they get into leagues, they start shooting. The modern sporting rifle, the AR-15, just continues to evolve, and people keep discovering it's small, it's light, it's ergonomic, it has no recoil, it's fun to shoot, and the ammo's fairly inexpensive. Why would I not have one or six?
Right.
You know? And the other thing I keep telling people on the radio show, people, the ammo is cheap right now, and it's available. You need to do like the investment guys always tell you to do, dollar cost averaging, always be buying a little bit of stock, always be buying a little bit of ammo. Once a month, once a week, buy a box, whatever you can do, squirrel it away. There will come a time, like 2 or 3 years ago, when the shelves are empty, and you will be glad that you just kind of squirreling the stuff away.
Oh, but Tom, then you have
a cache
of ammo in the media.
You know what the problem with that is?
What's that?
My cache isn't big enough yet.
It is funny, though, to hear people who, again, are not only are they not knowledgeable about this issue, but they are scared of this issue. And so, you know, if they say 500 rounds of ammunition, that sounds like a lot of ammunition to that person.
That's a morning.
And then you have to explain, right, you know, well, no, not really. I mean, if I'm going out with my family and friends, we're going to go through 500 rounds in maybe a weekend.
Yeah, easily.
Right?
Or a morning, depending on what you're doing. There's something I wanted to mention here, because the president keeps making this statement, and you hear other politicians say it. Well, no one wants to take your guns away. No one wants to take your guns away. You hear that over and over again. And then his supporters will say, well, the president didn't, you know, put out anything about taking your guns away. Let's see. In Congress and in the Georgia legislature and in the Washington State legislature, identical bills were just introduced. They have Bloomberg's fingerprints all over them. That ban not just the sale of semi-auto rifles and handguns, but they ban the possession of them. When you ban the possession, that's called confiscation. So right now in the U.S. Congress and in at least two state legislatures, there are bills sitting there that call for the confiscation of all semi-automatic rifles, all semi-automatic handguns. So don't tell us no one wants to take your guns away.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we just saw the New York Times first front page editorial in 95 years saying we need to ban vast swaths of firearms. It is so disingenuous because the president says, look, I'm not saying that we should ban guns. No, but your supporters are.
Right.
And if you won't acknowledge that, it kind of says something, doesn't it?
Well, it's not like it's a surprise for us, right? But for those, and you will hear the media say, well, nobody wants to take your guns away. You guys are paranoid. You're just the crazed right wing. And I go, well, there's an old saying that it's not paranoia if they really are out to get you.
Right.
And we don't have to imagine it. We just say, all you have to do is look. They're introducing bills. They want to pass laws that will cause the police to have to go door to door to take away your guns, or you have to turn them all in. Now, how can they get confiscation? Only through registration, right? How else would you know who has a gun?
Mm-hmm.
Hence the universal background check. So it all ties together. There's a grand plan there.
Oh, I think you're right. I mean, I think the grand plan, it's interesting. I mean, the modern gun control movement kind of got started in the late 60s with the Gun Control Act. Then, they were known as Handgun Control or the National Council to Ban Handguns.
Which was a part of the Methodist Church.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. That group was actually formed by the United Methodist Church.
And as that brand loses popularity, then, okay, well, now we got to shift to, now it's not about banning handguns. Now it's about preventing gun violence. Today it's about gun sense and gun safety, right?
But you're trying to co-opt these words, right?
Mm-hmm. Because, frankly, what they're calling for has never been popular among the American people.
Anytime people get to vote on it, it fails.
Right.
And here's the big change. Unless somebody can come along and drop so much money on an advertising campaign that they can actually persuade the public that white is black is white, up is down, that's what Bloomberg is doing. Bloomberg is the big change because he, by himself, the man's worth close to $40 billion now.
Mm-hmm.
He can outspend the NRA and every other gun rights group altogether out of his back pocket. And that's one of our challenges is, okay, we may not have Bloomberg money, but what do we have? We have numbers of people. We have people, and
right.
We can use that.
And that's, and that is key, because in Virginia, for instance, Bloomberg spent over $1 million, which is, pocket change for him.
Right.
On state Senate races, mm-hmm. And that's big money in a state Senate
race. Yes, it
is. And he wanted to flip the Virginia State Senate.
Right.
Didn't happen. What happened was in the Richmond suburbs, it's a little town called Powhatan.
Right.
You had this surge of voter turnout that actually overwhelmed the increased turnout in Richmond, the anti-gun vote in Richmond. Absolutely. Because, look, first of all, as far as advertising goes, I think we are sort of we're sort of numb to advertising. There is nothing like that face-to-face, one-on-one communication. That beats a 30-second commercial starring a celebrity every day of the week.
Absolutely.
So when you actually have your friend, your neighbor, your kid's teacher, whatever it is, talking to you about gun ownership, and I know Bob. Bob's a responsible guy. Or, Carol, she's great. And she's a gun owner. Wow, that's awesome.
Right.
It gets people thinking. So that absolutely has a big impact, I think, on this debate. But the other thing that I think also has a big impact where we can push back against that machine messaging is, again, just, being able to point out on our social media pages the positive stories about firearms, the armed citizen stories. We're going to have our hero of the day every day. I know that you talk about defensive gun uses
absolutely.
On Gun Talk all the time. And to get people an honest picture of firearms and gun ownership in America.
I ask people, do a personal experiment. Every time you get a chance, bring up to people you're talking to that you are a shooter and a gun owner. You will find that you get a positive reaction from most people, and when you don't, it opens the door for you to just have a conversation, and they may never have had a conversation with somebody who they think, well, this is like a normal-sounding person, and yet it's a gun owner, but I was told you people are all crazy.
Right.
And, I always say that you're vaccinating people because when their personal experience tells them one thing, they can't be sold a different story.
Absolutely. Tom Gresham, he is the host of Gun Talk. Thank you so much for coming by.
It's
awesome
so much
to see
fun.
You.
We got to do this more often.
We really do, because we didn't even talk about everything you've got going on. So,
I got nothing, man. I'm just waiting around. You
right.
Know?
I'm amazed. This is the longest that Tom has sat down in like 4 months, right here.
That's okay. We're doing TV. We're doing fun stuff. You know, check guntalkmedia.com. You can find everything we do. How's that?
All right. Thanks so much, Tom. It's great
Always
seeing you
a
again.
Pleasure.
Tom Gresham joins us here on NRA News Cam and Company. After a quick timeout, we're going to talk with Jim Liberatore of the Outdoor Sportsman Group. Plus, we've got some big news out of D.C. A federal judge has rejected President Obama's claim of executive privilege when it comes to Fast and Furious documents, emails, communications, reports, and whatnot. We'll give you more details right after the break here on NRA News, Cam & Company.
Speaking with Vicki Callmaker with the Women's Shooting Academy. Vicki, welcome to NRA News. Thanks for what you do, and tell folks, what is the Women's Shooting Academy?
Academy is an organization I created back in 2008 out of the result of the attempted abduction of my then 10-year-old daughter, and also the home invasion attempted murder of my 27-year-old son. So I've had two personal things that have kind of prompted me to start the Women's Shooting Academy. The Women's Shooting Academy continues to gain just a horrendous amount of support from the community. And what we do is we train and educate men and women to stand up and fight for their Second Amendment, and I love, love, love teaching the art of self-preservation.
Well, I'll tell you what, Vicki, if that's not motivation to have those two incidents happen, you know, to get you involved, and you really have done some tremendous work here. So let's give an idea of some of the stuff that you do. You've got a lot of neat events that you guys do. Let's run down some of those.
Well, our most popular class is Ladies Introduction to Handguns. We also do run that on a co-ed basis two or three times a year, but it's an entry-level class. So we'll take a student from an entry-level, never picking up a firearm before, all the way through the competitive concept of shooting. And so we offer a variety of classes ongoing, and one of my favorite things that we're getting ready to launch, and it's really sad to say that we're doing this on the heels of the Paris attack, but I think the time has now come that we need to start training and educating the general public about what they do if they're in a situation and there are active shooters.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's very important information to have. Speaking with Vicki Callmaker with the Women's Shooting Academy, what else do you guys do?
Offer a variety of non-lethal classes, and one of the reasons I do that is I have found that a lot of women are not going to enter the gun world. They're just not. They don't have that mindset. But guess what? If I can meet her over in a pepper spray class or a safety hour or a seminar, and I can start to kind of gain her support and her trust, I can walk her right into the firearms industry. And it's a beautiful thing to watch that transition happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And Vicki, it's about no matter whether you take lethal or non-lethal, you know, means to protect yourself. It's about, you know, it's about learning to have that situational awareness to be able to protect yourself. And especially when you say whether it's a situation with an active shooter or anything else that's going on, it's very important information to have.
Well, you know, I believe it's my right to choose my method of protection. And I don't want to go lethal if I don't have to go lethal. But the greatest tool that your listeners already have is their awareness and mindset. I just tap into that. And I just teach them that, you know what, you've got it. You've got more in you than you know you have. And I just really want folks to realize that they don't have to be good little victims anymore. And I think for so many years, that's what we taught people, to be a good little victim. And I don't think that's the case anymore. I do believe there's times that you have to submit. And if you do have to submit to your attacker or perpetrator or the criminal or whatever you want to call that person, then submit. But only submit until another option presents itself.
And I'll tell you what, Vicki, the word that comes to my mind when you're talking about this transformation that happens is the word empowerment. I imagine it must be just never get old to see the transformation that happens and see when a woman is empowered with this knowledge and what you're teaching her and how that must transform their lives.
Well, I'll tell you, my tagline for the Women's Shooting Academy is educate, encourage, empower. And you hit the nail on the head with that one, empower. There is nothing that I can verbally describe that moment when I see that she gets it, that I have empowered her. I'm actually going to release a video tomorrow of a mother and daughter who took a class 2 weeks ago, and it's incredible to see their transformation of where they tame from 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 p.m. And empowerment is it. And I think we all have the ability to be empowered. And I'm excited that I get to be one of those driving forces.
That is so cool. Speaking with Vicki Callmaker with the Women's Shooting Academy. All right, Vicki, we're coming up on about 30 seconds. We've got to wrap this thing up. So I want you to tell people why they need to check this out. Check out the Women's Shooting Academy, why it's important that they learn these skills.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, it's important that you learn the skills because you are worth protecting. And I promise you, someone in your life loves you enough to keep you around for a while. If you need anything from the Women's Shooting Academy, you can reach out to me, 888-287-4668. For a list of all upcoming classes, please go to thewomensshootingacademy.com and be sure to check out 1millionunited.com and thewomenssafetyacademy.com.
Welcome back to SHOT Show 2016, Las Vegas, Nevada, the Sands Convention Center, where a small city has gathered for the Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show. Somewhere around 50 to 60,000. We'll get the final attendance figures later in the week, but it is busy, I will tell you that. Jim Liberdor of the Outdoor Sportsman Group will be with us here in a couple of minutes, but I do want to get to some of the day's top stories for you. Politico reporting that a federal judge, Amy Berman Jackson, has ruled today that President Obama's assertion of executive privilege to deny Congress access to records pertaining to Operation Fast and Furious isn't valid. Quote, there is no need to balance the need against the impact that the revelation of any record could have on candor in future executive decision making, since any harm that might flow from the public revelation of the deliberations at issue here has already been self-inflicted. The department itself has already publicly revealed the sum and substance of the very material it is now seeking to withhold. Since any harm that would flow from the disclosure sought here would be merely incremental, the records must be produced. That's, again, from Judge Jackson. The judge said this ruling is not predicated on a finding that the withholding was intended to cloak wrongdoing on the part of government officials or that the withholding itself was improper. In other words, she's not saying that executive privilege doesn't exist. What she is saying is that since the Justice Department has already released other information, including the Inspector General's report that was released in September of 2012, that there's really no need for the president to try to withhold these additional documents. And again, this goes back to 2012, where Congress subpoenaed held Eric Holder in contempt for failing to turn over these records that had been subpoenaed by the House. House tried to start a lawsuit, and the administration asked Judge Jackson to throw the suit out altogether. Judge Jackson, by the way, who is an Obama appointee, left open the possibility, Politico reports in a ruling on Tuesday, that some of the disputed records could still be held back from Congress because they contain sensitive information on law enforcement techniques, implicate foreign policy concerns, or discuss matters covered by attorney-client privilege. The administration could also appeal the ruling, but this is a big step, hopefully, for the release of more information about that operation that led to the death of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry and, of course, the Terry family still seeking answers all these years later. All right, I want to welcome to the program right now from the Outdoor Sportsman Group. Jim Liberatore is with us. How are you, sir?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes out of a very busy day.
Crazy. It's awesome, but it's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, and every year we say this. Every year it's like, how could this get any bigger?
Yeah.
How could this get any more popular?
Yeah.
And somehow we find a way.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel an enormous wave moving in our direction towards what we do and what we stand for. I really am feeling excited about this next year. And it's some big things are on the horizon for this industry, I hope.
I think that you're right. And I think that we're already seeing some of those big things. 2015, a record year for background checks, for NICS purchases. So, you know, it does seem like more and more Americans are starting to think about their right to keep and bear arms, and not just for self-defense. That's absolutely a key component of this. But you know, we've got Americans who are they didn't grow up hunting,
right?
But they want to get into this. They want to find out what this is all about. And I think that the outdoors is becoming more open than it has been in the past.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is I am very evangelical on that point, because 3 years ago I was hired because of my television experience, not because of my outdoor experience. I didn't own a gun. I'd never been hunting. And what I've learned about this space, I am so fired up. And the reason I love it is because if I had a dollar for every time I told one of my friends the hunting story or the gun story, and they said, I had no idea. You know, our research shows that 90% of Americans are either pro-hunting or hunting agnostic. Pro-gun, or, you know, they don't really care.
Right.
But once they learn the story, it all changes. And I've had a lot of people, there's people who think that when you hunt, you shoot the animal and you leave it in the woods. You take a picture and then you leave. But the excise tax, the conservation, the whole idea of protecting yourself, you know, having the right to protect yourself. We've talked about gun-free zones. And if you have 5 minutes to talk about a gun-free zone with someone who is, you know, open-minded, it just all starts to change.
Right.
And we just got to tell the truth. That's what, you know, the truth will set all of these people free. That's where we're going with this.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you about the trends in television. Because as you said, when you got hired, you were not a gun owner.
Right.
But you knew TV.
Right.
And so how do you see the shows on the Outdoor Sportsman Group evolving? You know, my wife watches, like, the Cooking Channel and Food Network constantly. And
right.
So I've seen this evolution of, it used to be cooking shows, and now it's kind of competition shows and it's game shows. Are we seeing that same, not the same transition, but are we seeing a transition in the world of outdoor television to tell compelling stories? It's not necessarily about the deer or the game that's being hunted or even the location,
right,
but it's about the whole story.
Right, and what we're trying to do is we have a very, very specific strategy. And Duck Dynasty, which launched last night, is part of that strategy. And I always remember when, and I use Obama's election in 08, there'd be 20,000 people at some event, and you'd be like, wow, how did he get so... Well, you find out Bruce Springsteen performed for free before he got up and spoke. Duck Dynasty is our Bruce Springsteen. We want to bring people to the network and then introduce them to what we do. And so the beauty of our programming is we don't have to appeal to the lowest common denominator of housewives yelling at each other or I meet a lady on Friday and marry her on Friday night. You know, none of that junk, quite frankly. We get to appeal to people's love of God and country and family and, you know, the environment and conservation. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to introduce them to that. And we want people to say, wow, I didn't realize that. The other thing we want people to do, if you buy a gun for self-defense, go out and use it for fun. You know, don't put it in your drawer and be afraid to go in the bedroom.
Right.
You know, those are the types of things, because I think our space is what this country needs desperately. And we have all the right answers. We just got to let these people know. And a show like Duck Dynasty is going to bring people. And then a show like Carter's War, where people will be like, now, hold on a second. This guy is a hunter, but he's a conservationist. You know, we were at the Television Critics Association last week. The first question I got was, do you really want us to believe that a network that celebrates the killing of animals is also now trying to protect them? And it opened the door for the entire explanation, where people came up afterwards and said, I had never heard any of that before. It's the same way with gun-free zones. When we explain how counterintuitive a gun-free zone is, people who are open are like, wow, that does make sense. You know, we have a president now who is going to let, you know, more immigrants come into our country, not vetted, I think, properly, wants to let people out of jail early, you know, and at the same time wants to take our guns away. You know, it's just people get it. And that's why I'm excited, because I think people are going to more and more move to our side of this debate.
I think that they are. You know, it's interesting, though, because we do live in a media environment where we tend to watch what we like,
right?
And so is it hard? How do you get those folks to watch Outdoor Channel or Sportsman Channel if they aren't already at least somewhat interested or curious?
Yeah, and that's the Duck Dynasty strategy. Right now, Duck Dynasty has about a 90% awareness of people walking around the street. Outdoor Channel has 15%. You know, so I look, and there's also, you know, when you talk about the gun and hunting agnostic, there's a huge crowd out there for us, but we have to bring them. And the first step of that is someone coming to our network and seeing Carter's War and seeing Duck Dynasty, you know, thinking, oh, I didn't realize this is what this network was about. You know, I think most people think of our network and they're like, okay, it's 6:58, there's a dead whitetail in the woods.
Right.
It's 7:28, there's a dead whitetail in the woods. You know, it's 7:15, people are whispering about killing a dead whitetail. You know, that is the perception that we need to change. And the other thing is the entire industry, and I'm speaking, you know, to the choir, but we need to be evangelical in our approach to educating people. And oddly, this industry has not really done a very good job of that, in my opinion. They haven't coalesced. They're all kind of doing their own thing. But if we can get the industry to come together and be evangelical, I think, like I said, we have the right story.
Right. I think you're right. And the challenge, I think, is, you know, we're talking about an individual right, an individual freedom. We're talking about rugged individuals.
Right.
It's kind of like herding cats to get, you know, a bunch of rugged individuals to work on the same
page. That's so
true. Jim, unfortunately, we are almost out of time here. I don't know where the time has gone, but I could talk with you about this for hours.
Yeah.
We got to have you back on the show at some point.
Yeah. And anybody who's listening, I'm going to ask you to make it your point this year to find your friends who don't believe. And make them believers. You know, tell them the true story. We have to go out, and we'll do that one by one if we have to. But we've got to get more people who understand this space.
Absolutely. Jim Liberatore with the Outdoor Sportsman Group. Again, the big news Duck Dynasty debuting last night. And congratulations on that.
Look forward to a great 2016 for you, Jim. Yeah, thank you.
All right. Hour one in the history books, but hour two is yet to be written. We'll talk with Ron Bellin of Reaper Outdoors, Annette Walker, the 30 Cal Gal, Juliana Crowder of A Girl in a Gun Club, all coming up in the next 60 minutes as we continue our coverage of the 2016 SHOT Show, sponsored by Nosler and our on-location sponsor, Adcore Defense. We've got more coming up right after this.
We're here at the NRA World Shooting Championship here at Peacemaker National Training Center in beautiful West Virginia. And Gabby Franco is here with NRA News Tips and Tactics. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Oh, very good. Enjoying the competition and the toughness of the competition, too. It's challenging.
Well, we just saw you out there on the line, and it is a little nerve-wracking being out there, and they're calling out, you know, different combinations of patterns here, like, you know, hunting around. But let's talk a little bit about tips and tactics first. Tell folks who don't know, what's it all about?
Well, the good thing about tips and tactics is that we bring a lot of great instructors who are expert in certain things like hunting, defensive, or just target shooting. And then they explain to us what is it they do and how they do it so well. And I feel honored to be a host for this show. I really love to hear these great instructors and actually put my input into it, even though I may not be an expert on their in their field. But there's so many things that we relate to that I can say, you know what, this is what I do as a competitive shooter or as a accuracy or something like that. So it is definitely for men and women who ever wants to watch and learn, hey, just make sure that you tune in.
And Gabby, a great thing about that is we're all about keeping the shooting sports, hunting, everything healthy, vibrant, getting new people coming. And a lot of people need that kind of information. They're not all experts like folks around here are. The tips and tactics is really practical stuff for them.
Let me tell you something about being an expert, okay? This competition shows you, it really humbles you. It's like, you know what, I'm good in pistol shooting, but I come here to shotgun and I barely know how to shoot that. And I try to do my best and learn from it. And I love that. And that's what I tell people. Don't hesitate on going to a competition just because you don't know. That's how we learn. And the moment you say, I'm not going to go, you're limiting yourself. And at the end, that's not good.
And if you don't try it, how do you ever know how you're going to do?
Exactly. And like yesterday, I had a lot of things with Bianchi Cup. I've never shot that before. This I've never shot before. And I was thinking to myself, what am I doing here? And then I said, you know what? There's so many things I'm learning now, not only about the sport and activities, but how to keep my mindset strong. It's like, you know what? I don't know about this. I'm going to do my best. The next one is the next. Leave that in the past and keep going, keep fighting and trying to do my best. Whatever is going to happen in the future, I don't have that. So I need to do my best. So
now you're wearing a Remington shirt. So let's talk about the importance, Gabby. We see it in all the other world of sports. It's important in shooting sports. How important is that relationship with you and your sponsor, Remington?
Well, one of the things I really love around Remington is that when they approached me, they told me, Gabby, what do you want to do? What do you want to achieve? We want to help you out to achieve that. And to me, that's priceless because these companies, they want not only us as a sponsor shooter, but everybody else to enjoy the sport safely, responsibly, and they're putting everything they can out there. And that's amazing.
All right. So what's your advice for someone who's out there? Because we talked off camera. You're a role model for so many different kind of young ladies and other people who want to get in the shooting sports. They see you out here doing it. What's your advice about trying this?
Well, just show up. Just go. Learn about the sport, whichever you want to go in and watch. But just go there, learn, and talk to people. What are the gear that you need? What are the things that you need to have in order to compete correctly? And then train. It's fun. Have fun first. That's my best advice. Have fun, learn, fail. And with the fail and all that, you're going to rise, and you're going to do great.
Gabby, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, starts right now. And our on-location sponsor all week long, in fact, all year long, we are on location, Adcor Defense. And we want to welcome Adcor Defense as a sponsor as well. We are at the Sands Convention Center for SHOT Show 2016. Coming up on the program this hour, Annette Wachter, the 30 Cal Gal, is going to join us. Also, Juliana Crowder from A Girl in a Gun Club will be with us later on in the hour. Already starting to hear from you as well, talking about our coverage, kicking things off with Arlie Ermey. And follow that with Tom Gresham of Gun Talk. Just got through chatting with Jim Liberatore of the Outdoor Sportsman Group about the big debut of Duck Dynasty last night, and the fact that the Outdoor Sportsman Group is working to bring in a lot of new eyeballs with this strategy of getting a show. Everybody knows, and I'm sure that there are some Duck Dynasty haters out there, but most folks really like, and then using that as an opportunity again to bring in some new eyeballs. So Sunday, when we got here to Las Vegas, our friend Ron Bellin from Reaper Outdoors invited us down to a gun club where Marcus Luttrell and Ron, Team Never Quit, making their debut for their own line of ammunition. And the place was packed, I got to tell you. I mean, it was just wall to wall. But Ron was nice enough to take a couple of minutes out of his very busy evening and talk with us about the line of ammo, as well as the latest with Reaper Outdoors and all of the things that he has going on. So take a look and a listen to Ron Bellin, former Navy SEAL, now with Reaper Outdoors. Well, we're here at the Strip Gun Club in Las Vegas, Nevada, and SHOT Show 2016 has not yet officially begun, but you guys are kicking it off anyway. Ron Bellin is here, our friend from Reaper Outdoors. Good to see you.
Good seeing you too, Cam. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is this event here?
This is a very special event. We have several companies that actually came in, and the thing is, what we're doing is we're bringing veteran-owned, veteran families coming in and supporting these great things that we got: TNQ ammunition, Reaper Outdoors ammunition, Axelson Tactical. So it's a big event to just bring people out to see what we're doing, and our charities as well.
So all of the companies that you just mentioned, these are veteran-owned, veteran-started, right? I mean, this is you and your friends, basically. You, Marcus, Jeff Axelson, Matt Axelson's brother, yep, running Axelson Tactical. I mean, these are the men who have gone and fought, basically, who are now coming back, and you guys are starting your own companies. I mean, it's really cool, Ron.
Yeah, it's a bunch of startups. I mean, even if, like Matt, you know, who died in 2005, you know, his family started Axelson Tactical. So, you know, there's a huge huge movement right now with veterans being out there and doing good things for people, and also building businesses. So we come together as a group. Marcus, obviously, is a great promoter and a great American. Big war hero, you know, he's a great guy and a great friend to me. So we just want to support each other, and I really appreciate that. And we definitely support the Axelson family. They're just a great family. Got the Dietz family coming in this week as well. So we have a lot of activities happening. So we called this this whole event just so we could have our own personal time here, let people see what we're doing. We have a lot of great people coming in that we invited, and it's been great so far.
So I've got to ask, because, you know, right now gun control supposedly is a big issue for Hillary Clinton. It's obviously a big issue for Barack Obama. I imagine that there are a lot of anti-gun activists out there who are scratching their heads saying, why would you, Ron Bell, and why would Marcus Luttrell, why would you guys want to, and why would Jeff Axelson want to create these modern battlefield weapons of war for sale for civilians? Can you talk about the rifles, the ammo, the products that you make, and why believe that these are part of our right to keep and bear arms?
Yeah, first off, we have this thing called Second Amendment. That is our history. This is our country. You know, we fought, we bled, we died for this country. And the veterans out there, every single one of you have done great things. We have fought for the Constitution, and the Second Amendment happens to be one of them, right? Can't take that away from us. Our country was founded on that. Not only that, these weapon systems that we have, these bullets that we have, and all the other products that circle around it, isn't just used to go out and kill people. That's not the intent. The intent, number one, is that you have that right to bear arms, period. And actually, you know, on top of that, it's not just to go hunting. It's to protect yourself, your family, and our way of life here in America. That's been a great deterrent throughout history. Not only a deterrent, but we should also have that right as individuals. We should have that right as Americans and being responsible to own weapons like this. We let 16-year-old children go out and literally drive a car. They kill more people every year than weapons do. Law-abiding citizens, when they buy a weapon, they register, they do exactly what they're supposed to do. They keep these weapons in a place where it should be safe, and they use them when they need to use them, and they use them how they're supposed to be used. So we developed this stuff not only for self-protection as well as our family, home, and our country, but also for hunting. We are in a huge thing right now where all us veterans have gotten back. We have great technology out there, and that's the whole point of this stuff. There's technology. There's an evolution that goes from the military side that rolls right into the hunting side. And that's what we're doing. We want to be the frontiersmen that bring these products out to the nation and out to everybody out there in America.
Well, you know, you mentioned hunting, so I got to ask you, how is Reaper Outdoors going? How's the TV show? It seems like you've been on the road a lot more than you've been home lately.
We have. I say that's weather bound. Everywhere we went this year, it was a little warmer year, you know, so the animals weren't moving as normal, but we stay out there, we do our thing, and we have a mission to do. You know, every time we go out there, we have to have a show. So we just hunt really hard. This has been a great year for us, not only on the hunting side. The television show is doing great. You know, we're moving to primetime on the Pursuit Channel, 9:30 Tuesdays, starting third and fourth quarter, which start in July. And on top of that, we actually are launching this year, right now, 2 days from now at SHOT Show, the Reaper line of ammunition. Something that's a lead-free called Control Chaos, and it's great for hunting. It's great for home protection. And, you know, so we're launching that here and now.
That is awesome.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, how much goes into actually designing and manufacturing your own ammunition? A lot more, I imagine, than most people would think.
It is. It originally, for us, it started out that we were going to brand ammunition. Beck Ammunition is one of our sponsors. We talked about it. We worked with some ammo loads. And we had this controlled chaos that we kept using on animals, and it just kept knocking them down. Shuts down that central nervous system as soon as you hit it, right where you still have to have accurate shot placement. But I didn't realize how much work would go into it myself, not only filming hunts, but then flying to different places, testing the loads, making sure we got the packaging right, and the business aspect of it. The business aspect, just you got to create money. You got to get money to do this. So what I decided to do was just go ahead and get the best product out there that we could possibly find, and we scrutinized everything we did. From our weapons line down to our ammo line, we scrutinized everything. We even came up with a SEAL 1 cleaning kit for it. So we have the weapon, which is the vehicle, we have the ammunition that goes in and feeds it, and we have the cleaning kit that cleans it. So that's what we wanted to start with this year, keep it simple, stupid, the old KISS, that's what we love to do. And so we're going to move forward with that. And if for every box of ammo, Special Operations Wounded Warrior, another charity, is on that box, and they will actually earn a percentage from that for every box that goes out.
Oh, that's fantastic. And this charity, I know you and I have talked about this before, but Special Operations Wounded Warriors Fund, I mean, you guys are dealing with the Special Ops guys and their families And, you know, you do so much for them. Can you talk about the charity and some of the big thrusts of the charity?
Yeah, absolutely. Marcus.
Yes, sir.
Don't be shy.
No, I'm not.
Marcus is busy as heck right now.
I was with him when I did Carcass Island.
Yeah, so we have Special Operation Wounded Warrior. We call it SalCharity.com. We take guys hunting, fishing, camping, hiking. And it is. It's special operations. We believe in taking care of the brotherhood, taking care of our own. And the thing I always stress, to every command that's out there in the military, do the same. Every organization, do the same thing. Because it really pays off when you come together. One thing about special ops, we do come together. Not only for ourselves, but for our families and for those we've left behind, right? No one left behind. And that's what Marcus, the big thing with him. Team never quit, no man left behind. That's what we do. And we take them, their families, we take them out hunting, fishing, camping. We have family retreats, and even we're starting a scholarship program. So we've really upped the ante there to make sure we're taking people to another level when their father's not there for them or their mother has passed away or whatever's happened. We're there to help out and support. The same thing with Team Never Quit. They do this exact same thing with Lone Survivor Foundation. I have to mention them as well. Because it's just a great organization, and Marcus Luttrell has started up and continue on. And that's our focus. Our focus is that. We make out, and the more we can generate, the better off our organizations are and our charity organizations are.
So one more question for you, Ron. I'm going to ask you to get a little political, if you don't mind, because you know you talk about the job that our special ops guys are doing, and we are losing some of our warriors. We just lost a master sergeant. A few weeks ago, we had more special ops guys come under fire in Afghanistan. Do you feel like our military is relying too much on special ops? Are they being tasked to do more now with a smaller, military footprint in Afghanistan and really no military footprint other than our special ops guys in Iraq? We have the president saying we don't have boots on the ground. Yeah, we do. Because we've got special ops guys on the ground, and those boots matter. Let me just ask. How do you feel about the job that special ops guys are being asked to do right now?
First and foremost, we can do any job. Those guys can go out there and accomplish any mission, any size, any way. But you do. There's a reason we have a conventional style Army, Navy, and all that with all the supporting assets. So that's the thing I've always asked when I was active duty, and also the guys ask now, is just give us the support that we need to accomplish that mission. That's our job, though. The bottom line is, if people find out what we do, then maybe we didn't do it right. But our job, we've done it forever, is going to these nations that nobody knows about. We've done amazing things, and we don't talk about it later. And there's a reason for that. So the guys that are out there in Iraq and Afghanistan and all across the world right now doing this in special ops, that's what we're supposed to be doing. But if we are going to take on a mission as American, we're going to do something right, you need to unleash the dogs. And I feel very firm about unleashing the military. Let the military do what the military does. Don't hold them back, because you want a mission accomplished, it will get accomplished. Problem now, they're trying to accomplish a major mission with just a few people. We can change it. We can do amazing things. But the bottom line is, let's do it. Let's do it right. And that's what I don't like about this administration, is the fact that it's all political. We're not political. You tell us to do a job, we'll do it 100%, but at least stick behind us 100% and give us what we need.
Well, listen, we love sticking behind you, Ron. I'm glad we got a chance to catch up again. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Cam, thanks for coming out here, and I really appreciate you guys and what you're doing. Get the message out there. It's outstanding, and I'm a number one fan of you. You know that.
Oh, thanks, man.
So just keep that going.
It's great seeing you again, Ron.
All right, you too, brother.
Thanks,
Thank
sir.
You.
Ron Bellin with us from Reaper Outdoors here in Las Vegas, Nevada for SHOT Show 2016. And back with you live here at the Sands Convention Center, where SHOT Show is officially underway. Yesterday, again, media day at the range. Never been able to go before because we're always doing the show, but yesterday we were setting up, and so Cameron Gray, Danny Lyon, and I headed out there bright and early. And it was awesome, I have to say. I might have to have John. You might be filling in next year on Monday if we're already set up, because I want to go back again. That was very, very cool. And we still have Annette Wachter, the 30 Cal gal, going to join us in just a couple of minutes. In New Jersey, Chris Christie has vetoed the smart gun bill that was authored by The original author of the smart gun law, the law in New Jersey that says once a quote-unquote smart gun is available, that is the only type of firearm that could be sold legally in the state of New Jersey. Loretta Weinberg said, all right, well, yeah, we'll tweak it a little bit. Because she says that maybe the law, you know, is well-intended, but maybe it's actually preventing this technology from coming to market. So her tweak was not to simply scrap the law. No. Her tweak was to say that if you are a firearms retailer, that you could still sell non-smart guns, quote-unquote, but that you would be also required to sell smart guns. So you could sell, you know, your standard revolvers, your semi-automatics, but you would also have to have in stock, quote-unquote, smart gun, or guns that are equipped with whatever smart gun technology the state of New Jersey would define that as. Chris Christie did not issue a veto statement. The Asbury Park Press reports that Governor Christie just let this bill sit. He didn't sign it, didn't issue a veto statement. It's called a pocket veto, in essence. Scott Bach quoted in the Asbury Park Press story saying that the proposed law, the quote-unquote reform law, was simply swapping one failed mandate for another. And what really needs to happen in New Jersey, according to Scott and a lot of gun owners in New Jersey, is that the smart gun law simply just needs to get repealed off the books. All right, when we come back after a quick timeout here on this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, Annette Wachter, the 30 Cal Gal, will join us. Juliana Crowder, a girl in a gun club, coming up later in the hour as well. So stick around. We've got a lot more NRA News, Cam and Company, from SHOT Show 2016.
Speaking with Jose Morales, NRA training counselor. Jose, welcome to NRA News. We want to talk about the three rules of firearm safety. What are those?
Thank you very much for having me. The three NRA safety rules. The first one, the primary rule, is always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Now, what that means is we want to make sure that if that gun discharges by accident, that it's in the safest direction possible, the direction it will cause if the gun were to discharge, the least amount of property damage, the least amount of possibility of injury possible. And it's our responsibility to make sure that we never point the muzzle, which is the front of the barrel, at anything we don't want to shoot, including ourselves.
Okay. Rule number two.
Rule number two is always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire, which is common sense, but as my mother says all the time, common sense is not that common. We need to make sure that our finger in my pretend gun is on the side of the gun, away from the trigger guard at all times. And our finger only enters the trigger guard when we're ready to shoot, and as soon as we're done, it's removed immediately and always kept alongside of the gun, preferably on the frame.
Okay. And what's rule number three?
Rule number three, always keep your firearms unloaded until you're ready to use them. So the moment you pick up a firearm, you have to make sure that if they have any manual safeties, they're engaged. Open up the action, remove the magazine, visually and physically inspect to make sure that there's no rounds in the chamber, and then you are ensured that the gun is empty.
Jose Morales, NRA training counselor, let's go over those three rules again. Number one.
Absolutely. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Number two is always keep your finger off of the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And number three is always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it.
All right, the three rules of firearm safety. How can we get some more information about this?
Just check on nrainstructors.org for a comprehensive list of classes, and we'd love to see people take more of them.
Jose, why is it important that we observe these three rules of gun safety?
As I tell my students and gun enthusiasts and budding gun enthusiasts, guns are incredibly safe. We are the ones that are unsafe. We are the ones that make accidents happen. And if you follow all three safety rules all the time, not when you remember, not when you feel like it, but all the time, it is literally impossible to have an accident.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
I'm a mom, and just like millions of other women, that's why I own guns. We're responsible, we're law-abiding, and we're everything that makes America strong. Every day, we're willing to use a firearm to defend our families. But the media will never tell those stories. If a mom puts a gun to the face of a home-invading thug and makes him run for his life, the story gets buried. But if she's unarmed and murdered, the cameras will be at the scene before the police. It's time for moms like me to speak out. We are the majority. We demand the freedom to defend our families. And we challenge the media to tell the truth about our rights. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
It's your first source for Second Amendment news and information, as well as your first source for coverage of SHOT Show 2016. From the Sands Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, and again, our on-location sponsor, Adcor Defense. I want to thank Adcor Defense for signing on. I also want to thank our sponsor, Nosler. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Nosler folks. Hopefully this afternoon, going to make it out to the floor. But right now, very pleased to have with us on the program Annette Walker, the 30-cal gal. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to be here in person. I talk to you all the time on the phone,
but I know,
not
right?
in person, right?
I didn't realize this, but right before SHOT Show began, there was actually a match mm-hmm. here in Vegas, right?
Yeah, so I extended my stay. I'll be down here 10 days total. But
wow.
Came in Friday. We shot. It's a Precision Rifle Series match. And it was the second one of the season, so... just about an hour from here, and so that was 2 days of lots of rounds downrange, and we were shooting out to a mile, so it was pretty fun.
Holy cow.
We were very lucky. We didn't have much wind at all, so we were pretty fortunate. I timed out before I got to that target, so I was kind of bummed. But,
oh.
But most, I mean, we had ranges, a lot of shots out to about 1,400 yards.
Really? That's amazing. I mean, that takes some skill, and it takes some smarts when you're shooting that long, right? I mean, you've got to be able to calculate the wind shifts, and
right.
and you may be dealing with, you know, at 300 yards, the wind's blowing this way at 8 miles an hour, but at 600
exactly.
yards, the wind's blowing the exact opposite
right.
way at like 12 miles an hour. How do you try to factor in all of those variables?
This particular location we shot at was very flat, so you didn't really have varied topography to deal with.
But okay.
sometimes when we're up in the mountains, yeah, you'll have these... plateau areas and then a group of trees or and then beyond. So, yeah, every several hundred yards it changes. So you have to understand that. Like I said, there wasn't much wind, but at that distance, and you need to know the zeros on your gun really, really well. So the ballistics programs come into play there. Your range card is your friend. So you have to trust it.
And where's your next match going to be?
Actually, I'll put this precision rifle down, and I'll pick up my Palma rifle, so that will be the Burger Southwest Nationals in Phoenix, Arizona, the first weekend of February.
Wow.
Second weekend. It's always the week after Super Bowl. And, of course, my Seahawks lost yesterday.
I know.
So.
I'm
it was
sorry
a painful,
to hear that.
I know. So.
As a Patriots fan, my team's still in, but
yes.
I do feel bad for you.
I know.
It was yeah, really
kind of
yeah,
rough.
It was. We won't talk about that.
Okay,
we'll talk
you.
About happy things.
Thank you.
Well, actually, I don't know about that, because I do want to ask you about the gun control laws in Washington State, and that's probably going to make you even more upset than a Seahawks loss.
Right.
You know, we had you on the program talking about this referendum, the background check.
594.
Right. So it passed, right, went into effect, and this supposedly valuable must-have law, how is it, I mean, you know, you had law enforcement officials saying, listen, this is unenforceable, we don't know how we're going to enforce this.
Right. It's been
how is it
quiet.
Being enforced?
It's been very quiet. there hasn't, no, yeah, like you said, we have not heard anything in the news about anybody getting arrested or in trouble for it. So I think you still will call up a dealer to do a transfer, and they are still unclear as how to process it. And so I think until that is ironed out, they're just looking the other way at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but, it, you know, it's interesting because it didn't stop them. The referendum passed.
Right.
But it's not like the gun control advocate said, all right, our work here is done, right? No, they immediately say, okay, now it's our next step, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are they talking about doing in Washington State now?
So there's five bills going through our House right now. Anything from mandatory storage. Gosh, I can't even remember now. I'm trying to blank. You put me on the spot. And actually, Jay Inslee is trying to do an executive order similar to what the city of Seattle did for the taxes on the ammo and the guns.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait. The governor is trying to pass a tax through executive action?
Yes, for the whole state rather than just city of Seattle. So, of course, you know.
Is your constitution in Washington State?
I don't know. It must be
a little weird.
I think he made it up. Yeah.
Because normally, right? Mm-hmm. Normally, the legislature proposes bills, and you know, huh?
It hasn't gone anywhere because I think, again, they like to make the motions that they're trying to save us all from those nasty guns, and so it's more of a feel good process. And I think they just want to be known that they try to do something. You know, so
yeah.
It's sort of like Obama's checklist of what he wanted to do. All those things are already in existence. I mean, we know that. The gun industry knows that. But it made it sound like he was trying to do his part and go out with a bang of his
No pun intended. but, you know, I mean, speaking of going out with a bang, we're actually seeing gun stores close in Seattle.
Yeah, that's bad.
And move out to the suburbs because... You know, if you are a gun store owner in Seattle and all of a sudden your city says, well, now your products are going to cost more than the exact same product,
away.
Right, who's right outside of the city limits, why would you, as a business owner, remain in the city of Seattle?
Yeah, you wouldn't. And it was interesting, the Seattle Times last week, their headline was, oh, such and such gun shop is moving out of the city limits to avoid paying taxes. Well, no, they're moving out because you put them out of business.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, they're going to pass that cost on to the consumer. So it's not that they're avoiding paying taxes.
Right.
In fact, the consumer is the person being taxed, not the
consumer,
gun store.
If I can go 5 minutes and buy that box of ammo for $14 or City of Seattle for $22, I'm going to go 5 minutes away.
Right. So it's this is what's so frustrating. One of the things that's so frustrating because to have it posed or presented in that regard, right? Like, this gun owner just doesn't want to pay, or this FFL doesn't want to pay his taxes. When that is so not the case, when this is simply a matter of supply and demand and consumers wanting to get, the best product for the lowest cost.
Sure.
We shouldn't have to explain stuff like that to reporters, Annette. Like, they really should get that. I understand that a lot of reporters don't know the difference between a semi-automatic and a fully automatic. I'm prepared to discuss that.
Right.
Yeah. But damn it, supply and demand is pretty easy. You know, that's fairly fundamental, and it goes far beyond just the gun issue.
Right.
So is this, are you seeing a lot of slanted reporting still on these issues in Washington State?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, that article last week, how they phrased it. So, the Second Amendment Foundation, I just spoke to Phil Watson there last week, and they're still going to fight it, the city version of it. And, of course, they're not going to put up with Jay Inslee's state version of it either. I mean, I really don't know how the city of Seattle can get away with it. It's still...
It is being challenged.
It is, yeah.
I think SAF and NRA and several individuals are involved in that lawsuit.
Right.
And again, it's almost shades of the Affordable Health Care Act argument, right? Is this a tax or is this a fee?
Right.
Because if it's a tax versus a fee, apparently there are certain things that the council can do regarding firearms preemption, right? Because Washington State, you do have firearms preemption law there, right?
Yeah.
So the city of Seattle cannot make gun laws.
Right. Well, and they tried. Remember, they tried to ban guns from city parks.
Mm-hmm.
And so one brave gentleman said, okay, we're going to fight this. So he called the media up and the police and said, I'm walking into this park tomorrow with my concealed gun. And so And they'd already spent, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars putting up signs in the parks, and because of that, they had to take them all back down the next day because they knew they had something unconstitutional there. So.
Yeah, well.
So they try it all the time. They do it and ask for forgiveness later, or you know, make the Second Amendment Foundation or NRA come forward with lots of money to try to fight it.
And it's
but
amazing.
It's no skin off their back.
You know, and these are also, these are the same people who say that they're not anti-gun. Right.
Yeah.
They're just in favor of gun safety. But have they ever reached out?
You don't need that one.
Right. I mean, have they ever reached out to you? Because it seems to me like you know a thing or two about real gun safety.
Mm-hmm.
And we never see these folks who claim to be pro-gun, just interested in common sense reform. They never reach out to actual gun owners. They never reach out to people who are actually all about responsible gun ownership. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, what they're pitching, that's their pitch, right? But their principles are, we don't like guns, we want there to be fewer guns around,
right.
And the fewer guns we have, the better off we'll all be.
Because right. The Washington State, the media, they know me. They know I can answer these questions for them on the air, but they will not come out to me because they know I'm going to correct them on some issues, and it's so frustrating because, again, when they start to talk about something on the news, I'll call them up and say, I can answer the other side of that question for you if you'd like. Nope.
And they say no. I mean, you'll actually reach out to them.
Yeah. So let me clarify that for you, and they won't do it.
That is... Yeah. That's sad. I mean, it really is. And, I got to say, the audience, I don't think is well served by that. But when you have... When the narrative has been set, right, and now it's all about just trying to advance that narrative, you're going to get shut out. And unfortunately, you know, we talk about the growing number of women who are gun owners, who are, whether it's for self-defense or hunting or competition or all of the above or some of the above. But if the media isn't interested in acknowledging that, how does the rest of the world learn about it, right?
Yeah, and of course, again, they'll call me and say, oh, we really want to do, your story's really interesting that you shoot for the U.S. team and this is really neat, but they only want to feature that when something tragic has happened because they have to, you know, it's not, they can't do a feel-good story on me and my guns. They have to wait till something horrible happens. And so I always turn them down on those situations because... I don't want to play their game.
That's amazing. We're talking again with Annette Wachter, the 30 cal gal, Washington State resident. And all right, so you're not in Washington State, not for a few days anyway.
Right.
What are you looking forward to seeing here at SHOT Show?
People,
there's friends,
so much
products?
Everything. I'm here to represent some of my sponsors, I'm doing a lot of writing for my blog as well, and just to see a lot of people and catch up. It's, I mean, nine miles of floor space of just everything gun. It's amazing.
It just keeps getting bigger. I mean, we talk about this every year, but you know, like, so we're right now basically one level above the second floor of the displays, and then you can go down two floors. So you basically have now there are displays even up here now.
Yeah.
And I think it goes all the way up to the fifth level. You've got five levels of SHOT Show.
Right. It just gets bigger every year.
You know, and
you can't see it all. I think they predicted 22 seconds per booth if you actually tried it.
Wow. And you'd have to be here for all 4 days.
Yeah.
In 20. Yeah. Sheesh. So is this all a sham? Is this just the extreme gun lobby just putting this all together? Are these actors that we're seeing here wandering around?
It's a bunch of crazy gun nuts.
Or are these real Americans who are, here this is not a show, this is not a consumer show. So we're talking about...
This is business to business.
You're talking about buyers, you're talking about sellers, and, you know, we have a lot of FFLs, we have a lot of gun store owners who are here this week, and... You know, it seems to me like if America was really turning away from this, from our Second Amendment rights and our heritage, that the show would be shrinking,
right?
Not growing.
It's growing. I mean, it's just we've seen how much the interest in this industry has just exploded. And again, especially on the women's side, too.
Do you see that in Washington State right now?
Actually, I do. I know several of the store owners and sales are booming, so... and new stores are opening up, competitions are, I can shoot IDPA, USPSA, three gun, precision rifle, high power every weekend somewhere. I mean, there's something, that one nice thing about that state is if you want to compete, it is there.
And has the focus on gun control in Washington State, has that actually, Do you think has that increased interest at all in the right to keep and bear arms?
Yes, of course. I mean, like everywhere else, people are running to get their concealed permits, and competition has been, the interest in competition has really expanded. And in Washington, I sort of take a little credit because with my blog and trying to get all that out there, I think I get tons of phone calls or private messages from people who want to get involved but don't know where to start.
Right. So that next question then. If somebody is interested in getting into competitive shooting, obviously, again, there is an almost overwhelming variety of things that you can do in the world of competition, right?
Yep.
So where's a good place for folks to get started?
The internet. Every state will have a rifle and pistol association.
Okay.
And that usually covers more of the NRA sports, the bullseye shooting, whether it's pistol, small bore, or high power. And every state has a USPSA organization. Every state has an IDPA organization. So you can find this information on the internet, and they will mention the matches and where they are. Mm-hmm. I just tell people go to a match first and watch it, and just talk to people. And nowadays, people are so friendly at matches. They want new shooters. They will loan equipment. Although in Washington State, you're not supposed to do that. But it's very friendly to new shooters to get involved. And Washington State in general, through the High Power Association in Seattle or Washington, the junior program especially is amazing.
You know, we are seeing, I think, youth programs around the country. Mm-hmm. And again, a variety of disciplines, whether it's rifle, trap, and skeet is soaring around.
That one's going nuts.
Holy cow. And is that maybe like the... I don't want to say the best, but is that a good starter competition? Because, you know, imagine for a lot of people, like, shooting, getting into high power.
Mm-hmm. That's a niche.
You're going to, it's kind of pricey, you know. You're going to need to get the right equipment. So is it the simple stuff, the classics, the trap and skeet?
Right.
Is that, you know, the basic IDPA matches, even your local gun club ranges or, the postal matches?
Yeah.
Is that...
I would say pistol and then skeet and trap are probably the easiest because it's one gun. You can get something that's under $1,000 to kind of get your feet wet. And the ammo, especially in shotguns, can be a lot cheaper than some of the high-power precision things,
right,
too. And pistol's not so bad either.
And then you'll move your way up into, like, three guns, right? And
it becomes addictive. You just start accumulating more and more.
Well, I was going to say, is there a type of competitive shooting that you would like to... that you would like to do that you actually haven't had the chance to try yet?
Actually, shotgun. Sporting clays, I think, are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, more than skeet and trap. So sporting clays just have a little bit more activity to it.
Right? It's like golf with shotguns.
Right.
I love it. That's my favorite.
And because I've been using that in three guns, it'll help a little bit. But that would be a lot of fun.
Have you ever done the cowboy action?
No. Sometimes those matches are... same ranges as our three-gun matches, so I'll go over there and watch, and they'll invite me in and say, hey, come on, try this out. And they move so fast. I mean, I mean, the targets are very close, what they shoot, but they move so fast. They reload, and it's just crazy. And they have all their costumes and their nicknames. And
right.
It's a whole different world.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, listen, I'm really glad you had a chance to come by and talk with us today. And don't get worn out walking the miles of aisles here this week, all right?
I'll try. A little bit of sleep, too.
Well, yeah, a little bit here and there, right? Annette Wachter, the 30-cal gal with us here on NRA News, Cam & Company. And Annette, thank you again.
Thanks, Cam.
Thanks for all that you do as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely. When we come back, Juliana Crowder from A Girl in a Gun Club is going to join us on the program. Also coming up, Hour 3, we do have the Deal of the Day, Hero of the Day, and our Good Guy of the Day, plus Major Ed Polito of the Folds of Honor Foundation. If you're a regular viewer, you've seen Major Polito on the program before. He's a fantastic individual. So glad he's going to be joining us. Chip Eberhardt of Top Shot Academy, Scott Lacen's going to be with us, and country star Mark Wills will join us as well in Hour 3. So stick around. We've got more NRA News, Cam & Company from SHOT Show 2016 coming up right after this.
It's a tragedy that has struck a real nerve here in New Jersey and across this country. Carol Baum was ambushed and brutally stabbed to death right here in the front of her home by her ex-boyfriend, who was also a convicted felon. There's no question Carol feared for her life. She installed security cameras. She took out a restraining order. And she applied for a gun permit in April. But she was still waiting for that permit to be approved the night she was murdered. People here tell us this never should have happened, but that Carol was another victim left defenseless by the very system she relied on to protect her.
Romero, it's been awful.
My friend didn't have to die this way. He killed her like an animal. And I will never rest knowing that that's the way my friend's life was ended. Because she couldn't protect herself. And knowing that it could have been prevented makes it all that much more painful and hard to digest.
Absolutely, the system failed her. She did everything by the book. Everybody's outraged.
You feel helpless for that individual, a severe taste of disgust. This shouldn't have happened.
What do we have to do in this state? It's really backwards, and this poor woman lost her life because of it.
Carol got a restraining order, but in the end, what good was it?
You could blow your nose on a restraining order.
It's no protection whatsoever. It's just a piece of paper.
Every time there was an incident, she logged it with the prosecutor, with the Berlin police.
She actually came here with a pellet gun, blew the windows out of her car.
She had had her bedroom window shut out. The police said that they couldn't prove it was him that did it.
We don't have enough to get him now. Do you have enough?
He actually had a warrant out on him for an infraction against that restraining order. He walked around freely for that whole month. She was the prisoner. My friend might be standing right here today had they arrested him at least on that.
He was a sick man. He had already spent time in prison, so he wasn't abiding by any law.
He tested the waters. He was not reprimanded and had access where he shouldn't have.
And to make it even more tragic, 2 days before this happened to Carol, she went to find out the status of her gun permit.
Yes, she applied April 21st for a gun permit. It was too long to wait to get a gun.
The permitting system is atrocious.
The law says 30 days. It should be issued in 30 days.
And very, very seldomly do we see a permit that's actually issued in less than 30 days from the time it was applied for.
I called the police chief to talk to him about it. I never heard back. From what I understand, the police chief said he wasn't even aware of this law.
It's in black and white in the statute. Ignorance is absolutely no excuse. Every customer that walks through the door complains about our system. What we hear is anywhere from 3 to 6 months is the commonplace, and on a regular basis, 9 months.
Ironically, the worse the neighborhood, the longer it seems to take people to get their permit. I've heard of people waiting for a year and a half in Newark.
What do you say to those people who say, we will never know if a gun would have saved Carol's life?
Who is it for us to decide that? She should have received her permit.
Had he known that she had a gun, he doesn't know that she may not have had it on her. The firearm could have been a deterrent.
At least give them a fighting chance.
For women in a situation like that, there really is no better equalizer than a firearm.
If I had a firearm and I had a 50% chance of saving my life, as opposed to 100% chance of losing my life, I'm all for the firearm.
I'm here at the state capitol, where there's already talks from Republican lawmakers plan to push legislation that would speed up the permit approval process for people, quote unquote, protected by a restraining order.
Too late for Carol.
Change is needed more than ever. Gun laws in New Jersey either turn a law-abiding citizen into a criminal or a victim, and they're unacceptable.
They protect the criminal more than they do the victim. Being the person that Carol was, I know she's very happy for other people that this is coming to light and that we'll be using her name to lead this.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to take a lot more before there's any change, and I think it's going to have to come at the voting booths.
All our Democrats and any anti-gun Republicans all have blood on their hands for this.
Everybody should have a right to protect themselves with a firearm.
Don't punish the law-abiding people by keeping them out of their hands.
Welcome back to NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler and our on-location sponsor, Adcor Defense. Taking a look at the Adcor factory in Baltimore, Maryland, where we had an opportunity to hang out with Medal of Honor recipient Clinton Romache. not long ago. You can check out the segment on NRANews.com after we're done here from 2016 SHOT Show. And right now, I want to welcome to the program from a girl in a gun club. We have founder Juliana Crowder. And we also have executive director Robin Sandoval with us. Ladies, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us on the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm sorry, one quick technical... I'm getting an echo here, John. I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt the show flow, but I can hear... Ah, that's much better. Thank you very much. I don't really like listening to myself, yeah. You know, on a delay. It's just a little confusing. Anyway, thank you both for coming on the program. And for those who... I can't imagine there's anybody out there who doesn't know what a Girl in a Gun Club is all about. But for those who are maybe tuning in for the first time or have never seen you on the program before, can you talk about what a Girl in a Gun Club actually does?
Right. So we host chapters across the country for ladies to come out to the range for training opportunities, practice sessions, camaraderie. You know, social aspect of shooting. And a lot of the ladies that we service, almost 70% of the people who have come to us have never shot a gun before. So we are actively, you know, training these ladies and in introducing them into the gun culture and helping them figure out what their goals are, you know, what they want to achieve, and then providing them opportunities through our activities.
How big a part is the socialization?
It's extremely important. You know, women are very social creatures, and, you know, so having the camaraderie of the chapters and the clubs is very important. It's just as important as some of the training tips and educational process that we go through, because everybody wants to feel like they belong to something.
Right.
And that's what's important.
And, you know, you talk about people who are new to this, who've never shot a gun before, to know that, okay, I'm going into a community that could be very intimidating. But if it's okay, if it's other women and
right.
you and they know, okay, they're welcoming
right.
me.
Right, and that's really important, is because even, you know, some women are even afraid of other packs of women.
Right.
So we.
I'm afraid of packs of women. By the way.
So we try to make all of those events extremely welcoming. So if someone is coming for the first time and maybe doesn't know how to, you know, come alone, or we want to make her feel welcome right away, and make sure she feels like she has a friend. And then that way she's more comfortable to learn and has introduced herself to a whole new social circle that she may not have had before.
And so, Robin, this was kind of your experience, right? I mean, had you shot a gun before?
No.
You?
No. No, never. I was actually quite against guns. I definitely did not want a gun in my home. My husband had asked me. It was actually a 10-year conversation to bring a firearm into our home. And we have three children, and I was uncomfortable with it. I was very afraid. I grew up in a big city, and police were just minutes away. And
I had a similar experience growing up, because I did not grow up in a gun-owning household. My mom and dad got divorced when I was a kid, and, you know, dad never took me hunting, never took me shooting, anything like that.
Right.
So I was a grown man before I became a gun owner. And, you know, when you don't grow up with
right.
that as your tradition, and you're
right.
not taught gun safety as a kid, and you don't know a whole lot.
It's
about
very scary.
Firearms.
It can be.
Right? Because most of the time that you're hearing about guns, you're hearing about them used in a crime.
Absolutely. And women come to us all the time now at A Girl and a Gun, and they'll say, can you believe this woman said that she would never have a gun because her child found it? And I say, of course she would feel that way. How could she not? What's on the news every night? What does she see? She doesn't see responsible gun owners. She sees these crimes and these shock stories. And what is someone who's not part of our community going to think? And that was really my experience.
And it was actually very cute, because her husband had contacted me. He found the club. And he goes, I don't know if I can get her to come. I said, you just drop her off at the front door and I'll snag her. And that's literally what he did. I dropped her off at the front door. I took her in. And, I mean, it was a couple of visits. And then all of a sudden she found, you know, this light bulb just went on of, oh, my gosh, I can do this. I can take care of myself. You know, a big turning point was when Katrina happened, and she realized that maybe she needed an extra tool in her toolbox to protect her family.
Well, that was part of the 10-year conversation. For a long time after 9/11, he had introduced the idea of bringing a firearm into our home. And it really wasn't until Hurricane Katrina I started, you know, casually gathering peanut butter and tuna fish and, you know, non-perishables at our house. And he said, do you realize if something happens, someone's just going to come and steal our tuna fish and peanut butter? So I have no way to protect it. So that's when I started kind of opening to the idea of a firearm in our home, and opening into the idea of for him to use, not yet for me.
Okay.
So it really was a journey, and you know, I wrote an article recently about my kind of my conversion story, and it went viral, and it was really surprising to get that much attention. It crashed our website because it got so many visitors. But I got so much support from a lot of women who had a parallel journey where they were kind of the same way. They started with a lot of fear, and then they were open to the idea of a gun, and then they wanted to learn to use it, and then they wanted to do better. And, you know, it was this really big journey, and I think that's one of the things that A Girl in a Gun brings is we recognize people where they are, we invite you to where you are in your journey because we understand, and you can meet with other women. Are you afraid of having a firearm in the home with your children? Well, let's talk about that. What are your safe storage options? Let's talk about how to talk to your kids about it. And so there's so many different factors for women. I think it's not just about going to the range and sending rounds downrange. It's how is this going to be my new lifestyle? How do I identify myself as this new person?
And right.
How do we welcome others into the conversation? That's right. Really important for us.
Absolutely. And you know, to that end, I understand that, you know, look, the Internet is full of every opinion under the sun. And you're going to get every opinion under the sun. But the idea that because, Robin, you did not you were not born into this world with the mindset of a Charlton Heston, right, or even a Juliana Crowder. Like, this was something that, as you say, was a journey for you, mm-hmm. and it was a 10-year journey. If we want to see Americans embrace their Second Amendment rights, or at least recognize them, we have to understand that there are going to be a lot of people who did not grow up in a gun-owning household, who may have grown up very anti-gun, who can change their mind.
It is so critical this year. It is so critical in this election year that we as the, you know, gun owners of America really find the right way to have this conversation to where we're not so aggressive, we're not overbearing, we're not scary, but just and not offended. You know, a lot of the times I can be so offended when someone just doesn't understand my desire for self-reliance and self-responsibility and, you know, they just don't get it. It can be very frustrating, which turns to anger, which then we close their ears. So it's about finding the right way to have the conversation patiently, mm-hmm. supportively, welcoming them in. You know, so we're really working hard on a program of how to invite somebody to the range. You know, I'm going to print off little invitations that you can say, hey, come join me at the range. And, you know, and even write a guide. This is how do I take a new shooter to the range? That's going to be the next step we're going to give to our members is here's how you start the conversation if you are dying to have this conversation with somebody and you don't know how.
Well, I love the fact that, you know, again, you've got an organization where somebody could go from being afraid of firearms mm-hmm. and not knowing a lot about them to now being the executive director of the organization. And it really
yes.
can, I mean, it tells you, Juliana, how, you know, I guess how many Americans
yes.
are undergoing this similar experience, right? I mean,
right.
I've talked with, in Farmville, Virginia, actually, not long ago, I was talking to a woman in a one of the stores on Main Street, and she recognized me from, you know, down the street. She said, you were at the NRA news show, right? And I said, yeah. And she said, so I've been thinking, and just
oh,
like, right?
I've
been thinking mm-hmm. About getting a gun, and I want to get my concealed carry license. And I said, well, you know, that's great. And so we're actually talking about putting together a concealed carry course in Farmville.
Perfect.
And just, you know, inviting anybody who wants to come, go and do it. Because I know that there's so much interest.
Yes.
And really, you know, men and women alike. But there are a lot of women out there who are, I think, rejecting the idea that that you know, you have to be afraid of firearms. That there's
yes.
no way that you could be a responsible mom
well,
and be
is.
A gun owner.
There's a journey, too, and understanding that there's so many aspects to it. But once you take personal responsibility, and that's what I found, especially looking back over my journey in hindsight, I was afraid to take that personal responsibility. You know, as a child, I had my parents who were going to protect me. And as a young adult, I had the police not too far away. And it wasn't until I was a mother and I realized I am going to be the police of my little part of the world. And I had to take responsibility. And the police and law enforcement, while they're great, are minutes away. And so when something happens, I'm the police right here of my little world. And to take on that responsibility, not only for my children and myself, but for the neighbors to know if they're in a safe direction or if, you know, there's a bad guy, where he is, who's behind him, it's a huge responsibility that a lot of people are afraid to take.
But once you spend just a little bit of time with some education and, you know, some thoughtfulness about it, it's not a task that is not manageable.
Right. All right, so we've only got a couple minutes left. I want to ask a couple of more questions about the gun club itself, Girl on the Gun Club itself, because you have chapters all over the country,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And actually, we just brought on Alaska and Utah, and Tennessee is going to be coming on pretty soon. So we're kind of, you know, we're just continuing to grow, and we grow when women step into leadership. So, you know, we're always looking for, you know, a woman who wants to share our mission and our passion, and that's when it's right. And we've just launched a shooting journal. So that way we can keep the women who are here involved. So it's something that a beginner can use all the way through an upper level shooter. And it's a wonderful marriage of the tactical side of shooting, the learning, the ballistic data, and then the foo-foo side of being a girl and wanting to journal and needing to understand that sometimes we have good days and bad days, and tracking all of that together. So our shooting journal is really a process. They get a supplement packet every month that is going to challenge them to set goals, keep goals, and give them direction on training.
That is
We're
awesome.
So excited about it.
That is awesome. All right, so where can folks find you online?
Girlinagun.org, and they can also find us on Facebook.
All right, Juliana and Robin, thank you again for coming on the program. And Robin, one last question for you. What's your advice to somebody who maybe is in that position where you were?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the husband's been asking, hey, can I bring a gun into the house? Like, and they're finally to the point of, okay, I don't want to dismiss this out of hand. Clearly, there's something that's important to him, but they're not necessarily pro-gun. What's that next step that you would recommend that they take?
Well, my first piece of advice for someone who wants to convert an anti-gunner is to be kind. You're not going to tell them they're stupid and change their mind.
Yeah, nobody ever changes a mind by insults.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. So the first thing is to recognize that they are where they are because of a certain value they hold. If it's fear, if it's not wanting to take that responsibility, if it's not understanding, if it's I don't think I can learn to shoot a gun, or I don't know. Well, yeah, you can come to the range with me. And once you put that in her hand or his hand, it'll be smooth sailing since then.
There you go. Juliana and Robin, thank you again for all that you do. I'm so glad you were able to join us today.
Thank you.
All right, hour three of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our on-location sponsor, Accor Defense, coming up right after this quick timeout.
Speaking with Gary Kaufman with Targumite. Gary, welcome to NRA News. What is Targumite and what's the Targabot?
Targumite is a robotics R&D company that specializes in advanced training systems. And our first product is the Targabot. And you can see it operating in the background. There are two of them back there. And one is presenting a no-shoot scenario and the other one a shoot scenario.
It will get a little into the technology because it's really neat and very clever. It's innovative. But tell me, how did things come about with you guys being here at an NRA competition? And tell us a little bit about the background with NRA and a background about the company.
Well, we were at an OTOA, an Ohio Tactical Officers Association show, and we met a fellow named Jeff Overcash from the NRA, who is the law enforcement military liaison from NRA. And he was infatuated with this, and he said, you have got to come down to the headquarters and show this to everybody. So we did. We took a drive and brought all this equipment and went to the downstairs range at NRA, and they had must have been 50 or 60 people come downstairs, from pretty sophisticated shooters to administrative assistants in high heels, and everybody loved it.
So Targabot had a pretty good coming out there.
It did, and then we met Mark Lipp, who was the law enforcement fellow there, and he said, you have got to come out to the National Shooting Championships. We've got to put this in, and because the guys are not going to know what to do, and they're going to have a lot of fun.
So what's been the reaction from officers and other folks who've tried this? What are they saying?
Well, the reaction is 100% positive. And we have we've been lucky. We came out at 2015 shot just in January, and since then we have the Army and we have the U.S. Coast Guard, the Coast Guard Academy. We've got the Internal Revenue Service using it, the FBI. We have law enforcement all over the country been using it, and we're now going international. So the reaction is this is a very, very effective training tool. They're not buying it for the Coney Island aspect. They're buying it for the fact that it can make predictable presentations that help in that kind of threat, no threat situation, which is a biggie right now in training, and it seems to address that issue.
So how does Targobot work?
It's a combination of metals and motors and programming. It has an onboard computer, and it works with a rotational element, which is called rotational actuation, and then it has linear actuation. And it's done with some fairly exotic programming to keep it from flying apart, because there's a lot of centrifugal forces and things that operate. But that's basically, it's a small 20-pound unit, 6.5-hour battery life. It's programmable. It has onboard programs. It's a 1,000-meter remote control aspect. And you can also have there's a GUI that we provide, a PC program that allows folks to have a picture of the Targobot, and they either use their finger or a mouse, and they move the target the way that they want, and then save it, and then upload it to the Targobot, and that's all they have to know about programming robots.
So they can build their own programming scenario.
Yes, and that's exactly what they did here at the championship. They wanted a very specific presentation type, and they wanted it random so that the shooters couldn't game it by kind of watching each other. So it was constantly producing a pattern within a certain zone of activity. They programmed it themselves. I had nothing to do with it.
That's so cool. All right, so how do folks get more information about this?
Well, they can contact us at Targamite.com. We've got Jerry Michalak, who's been endorsing us for a while. He has a lot of great videos.
So it's Targamite's the name of the company. Targobot's the name of the guy back there. Guy. Yes. I'm already calling it a guy.
Yes.
And Gary. Gary, give us, in the last couple seconds, why should people check out Targobot?
I think they should check it out because it offers a new dimension in target shooting engagement.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
My pleasure.
Welcome back. Hour three of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, and our on-location sponsor of AdCore Defense from the 2016 SHOT Show. Cam Edwards, your host, glad that you are with us today. We are going to be here all week long at the 2016 SHOT Show, taking a look at some of the footage from the media day yesterday in Boulder City at the Boulder City Gun Club, which is about 20 miles or so outside of Las Vegas, Nevada. And this is a huge event, incredibly popular here at SHOT Show. As Tom Gresham said, you know, anytime you get to go and shoot and use somebody else's ammo, that's a win-win. And we had a lot of fun out there yesterday. Major Ed Polito of the Folds of Honor Foundation going to join us later in the hour. Chip Eberhardt of Top Shot Academy going to join us as well. Plus, we'll talk with Scott Laseth, the sporting chef, and Mark Wills, country star, will join us in hour three, or coming up at the end of the hour. Right now, well, we've got a couple of minutes. Let's get to our deal of the day, our hero of the day, and our good guy of the day. We'll start with the deal of the day from Cleveland, Ohio, and the plain dealer, Lorain, Ohio. The man accused of fatally shooting a woman Saturday in Lorain has a lengthy criminal history that includes convictions for assault and attempted murder, according to court records. Anthony Wayne Davis, he's 57, charged with murder in the death of 59-year-old Corinna Charlton. Davis could face additional charges once the investigation into the shooting is complete. Davis, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, has a criminal history dating back to 1989. Since then, he's been convicted of offenses including theft, forgery, breaking and entering, drug trafficking. In 1991, he was found guilty in Lorain County Common Pleas Court of felonious assault, attempted murder, and having weapons under disability. He was sentenced to 8 to 15 years in prison. He was released in 2004. So he did 13 years of his sentence. Now, in 2008, 4 years after he's released, sentenced to 3 years probation after pleading guilty to theft and forgery. The following year, 2009, Davis pleaded guilty to two counts of breaking and entering, theft and attempted theft. That case was later dismissed after he completed an intervention program. And then in 2010, he pleaded guilty to a host of drug charges, including trafficking heroin. Not possession, drug trafficking. Heroin trafficking. He was sentenced to 3 years behind bars. Cleveland Plain Dealer says his criminal history also includes convictions in Lorain Municipal Court for domestic violence and various traffic offenses. Investigators obtained a warrant for Davis's arrest on Saturday after finding Charlton dead Saturday evening in a home there in Lorain. Witnesses saw Davis leaving the house just after the shooting, according to investigators. The pair were friends, had been arguing shortly before the murder. Lorraine Sergeant Buddy Sievert says it's unclear what the argument was about. He says we're still investigating the circumstances. But, again, 57-year-old Anthony Wayne Davis with a very lengthy criminal history. And in a lot of cases, not a lot of time to show for it. Today's deal of the day. Now, our hero of the day. From Anchorage, Alaska, in the Anchorage Daily News, they report a Good Samaritan, an armed Good Samaritan, helped detain an armed robbery suspect at an Anchorage mall. It was the Fifth Avenue Mall in Anchorage, Alaska, sort of a downtown. Police spokeswoman Anita Shell, according to the Alaska Dispatch News, said in a statement that Sunday evening about $1,200 in goods were stolen from the Buckle clothing store. Those goods, however, were recovered during the arrest of 18-year-old Jan Bangout. Shell says employees believe the man was attempting to conceal the clothing in a bag while in the fitting room, and they alerted mall security. As the suspicious man left the store, he was confronted by mall security, and a struggle ensued over the bag containing stolen goods. During the struggle, the suspect drew a gun from his waistband. However, a Good Samaritan, also armed with a gun, stepped in and assisted security in taking the man into custody. So you have a shoplifting suspect who gets into the resisting, you know, being taken into custody by the security officer, and then pulls out a gun. Thankfully, again, there was an armed citizen there. Anna Boson was at the Apple store in the mall. Said it happened about 12:15 Sunday. She said the man was tackled before entering the store. She said two guns were involved, and I think the person of interest had a gun, so they were trying to get the gun from him. So the Apple store was evacuated while this was going on. The mall's security office deferred questions to the mall's marketing staff, who were not available on Sunday. The suspect charged with robbery, theft, four counts of assault, held at the Anchorage jail on a $10,000 bail with a third-party custodian required for his release. Well, we are very thankful that that Good Samaritan was there and was able to help that officer detain the suspect. And frankly, glad that that armed citizen was there so that the suspect was not able to engage in any sort of violence against the security officer or any of the mall patrons. Now, our good guy of the day from WCVB in Boston, Boxborough, Massachusetts. It's a story that has gone viral in the Boston area. A officer coming to the aid of a elderly man after he slipped and fell. WCVB reports that the police in Boxborough actually tweeted a picture of this officer who was spreading ice melt on the man's driveway. The elderly man had slipped and had fallen. The officer learned about this and was able to go out and actually do a good deed. Again, something little, something simple, something that, frankly, you know, we do for our neighbors all the time, hopefully. And we do stuff like this when we see those who have trouble getting around and those who are getting a little older. You know, this is something that we can do, but this officer in Boxborough, Massachusetts, in the right place at the right time and able to do the right thing for a resident there. Now, I want to welcome to the program Chip Eberhardt is with us from Top Shot Academy. Chip, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm well, Cam. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. Well, it's great to have you. I'm glad that you're able to navigate the sea of humanity and make it up here to Radio Row.
It is crazy. It is absolutely crazy here. I mean, it's packed. I mean, every year it just seems like there's more and more people here, which is good because we really need people, you know, here to support the industry.
Absolutely. And this is not a consumer show. This is right. An industry show. Yeah. We'll get the Great American Outdoor Show coming up in a couple weeks in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. That's a consumer show. The NRA annual meeting is obviously a big show.
Yeah.
But this is, as you say, I mean, you've got FFLs, you've got manufacturers, distributors, gun store owners, you've got trainers. You really get, I don't think people understand how big and how
wide this industry is until they come to an event like this.
Yeah, and it really is a cross-section, I mean, of America. I mean, as well as there's a lot of international buyers here, as well as international vendors. But it's really just great to see that cross-section. You know, it's not just, you know, what we normally think of as, you know, the people we see in our gun clubs.
Right. Exactly. So tell me a little bit about Top Shot Academy.
Well, we've been around for 5 years. We teach concealed carry primarily out of Cabela's in Illinois, but we also teach military as well as law enforcement.
I love the fact that you say we teach concealed carry in Illinois, because there was a day when you couldn't say that, Chip.
That's right. Yeah, we worked really hard. I mean, when I say we, I mean the good people of Illinois, the National Rifle Association. Todd Vandermeed was extremely helpful in getting that through. The Illinois State Rifle Association, the Second Amendment Foundation, Illinois Carry. There were a lot of people who worked together, and you know, it was an effort. But again, spearheaded by the National Rifle Association and finally getting it through, because, you know, when you looked at a concealed carry map, you know, you always saw this black hole in the United States, mm-hmm. and that was Illinois. And it's like, finally, you know, we have the ability, because, you know, the right to defend yourself is a God-given right. That's not something you get from a piece of paper. That's not something you get from anybody. The ability to defend yourself in public is what we get by being citizens of the United States of America, by having the Second Amendment.
And you know, for folks who may be watching right now and saying, Chip looks familiar, you were a part of the Freedom Save Its Place campaign, right?
Exactly, yeah. I'm really honored to be part of that, especially, I mean, being there sandwiched between, like, you know, Marcus Luttrell, you know, Wayne LaPierre, you know, it's like, wow. It all started, I wrote a op-ed in the Sun-Times about why I carry a gun, you know, because, you know, coming from, you know, Obama's, you know, home state, his home city,
right.
There's a lot of opposition. I mean, it's crazy. So people wondering, like, why would you need a gun? Well, there's a lot of good reasons, because violence can happen anywhere, any place, to anyone. And after I wrote this op-ed, it got to the leadership at NRA, it resonated, and they asked me if I was interested in helping out, and we put together the commercial. And it's a real honor to be part of that.
I just think it's fantastic. And, you know, we've been covering a lot of armed citizen stories, actually, in Chicago. We had, I think, two last week, concealed carry holders who were able to defend themselves against armed robbers, right?
Yeah, and you know what's amazing still, you know, they don't get it. When I say they don't get it, I'm saying, you know, the anti-gun folks. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, here we're talking, you know, we're preaching to the choir. But I'm saying they still think that, you know, guns are dangerous. That's like, you know, you know, and again, I'm speaking to, you know, preaching to the choir, but, you know, that's like saying spoons make people fat. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, each time, you know, one of these, you know, mass shootings goes on, they blame the gun. If it was somebody who was stabbed, they don't say we need to do something about knives. If there were people getting hit by cars, they don't say we need to do something about cars. But whenever it's a gun situation, they say we need new laws. And that's what, you know, the whole campaign, my Southside commercial for the NRA is talking about, we don't need new laws, we need to enforce the existing laws. I mean, last year there were over 80,000 people who walked into gun stores knowing they were prohibited from buying firearms. Over 80,000. They walked in there, they tried to buy them, they should have been arrested right there, they weren't. And the states and the government only went after 44 of them. That's insane. That's insane. They only go after 44. I mean, and how can you say, if we're not enforcing this law, we need more laws? Whenever they talk about gun control, it's always about taking guns from us,
right,
the good people. They never talk about we're going to go and take them from the bad guys.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you look at a city like Chicago. You've got a lot of gun control laws on the books. You've got a very high violent crime rate, and you've had that for a long time. And, you know, it seems to me like it's the good people, particularly those good people in bad neighborhoods,
yeah,
that are most impacted by these gun control laws. The criminals aren't impacted by these gun control laws,
no.
But if you're a mom or a dad or a person just starting out on their own, you live in a not so great neighborhood, maybe you live in a really, really violent neighborhood, you haven't lost your right to keep and bear arms just because of your zip code or the population density or the violent crime rate. As a matter of fact, you know, you really need to be able to protect yourself in these violent neighborhoods.
You need even more there. And, you know, there's no gun stores allowed in Illinois.
Right.
There's no,
or in Chicago.
In Chicago. There's no gun ranges in Chicago. So the good people, you know, in the inner cities who need the access to firearms, you know, who need the access to training, they don't have it available to them.
And the, you know, so we hear a lot of talk about the gun culture that exists in Chicago, right? And what they're talking about is criminal culture. What they're talking about is the gun as a taboo object, which is what the anti-gunners have actually made it. They've made the gun a taboo object of desire among the criminal class. What would it be like, Chip, if we had ranges, you know, able to operate in Chicago where we could have, you know, youth leagues, we could have JROTC programs, we could have, you know, scholastic clay target programs, we could take kids out to the range. I mean, if you actually had the ability and the and you had the desire among city officials to change that culture of criminality and to try to expose young people to responsible gun ownership, which includes, by the way, the dangers of being irresponsible with a firearm. And you know, the morality of we don't take a life over an argument. We don't take it. We have a right to defend ourselves. Right. We don't have a right to murder anybody over
Not
a beef.
Not at all. I know. That's, and that, it's funny you say that. I mean, whenever I teach a concealed carry class, I ask, you know, all my students, you know, do you want to kill anybody? Because, you know, that's what the anti think. They think that if you carry a gun, I say, ask your friends, do they want to get into an accident? Then why are you wearing a seatbelt? But to your question, what would happen if we had that culture, if we had ranges, we had youth programs, it'd be twofold. One thing that would happen is we'd have more citizens, law-abiding citizens, having access to firearms and proper training. And with the youth programs, we'd have a lot less negligence. Because right now, the youth don't have any access to them. And when they get access to them, they're curious. And if you have a young person curious about a firearm, it's going to be dangerous. Like, my father, he's always been an NRA member. He's always been in the shooting. I was about 7 years old when he taught me how to shoot with a little .22 rifle. I learned respect for a firearm at a young age. So one Christmas, I'm looking in my grandfather's closet for my Christmas toys. I don't know if I'm the only one that's done that. Am I?
I might have done it once or twice.
Take the fifth, okay. So when I came across in the back under a blanket, I came across this .38 caliber snub-nosed revolver. I don't know to this day if it was loaded or not because I knew not to touch it. I knew it wasn't a toy. I knew it was not for me. I didn't need to take it and go and show it to my three-year younger brother and show him how it works.
Right.
I wasn't curious because I'd been taught firearm safety. And I'm a strong believer that all children, if they're old enough to cross the street, they need to be taught firearm safety. I'm not saying they need to be taught how to shoot a gun.
Right.
But if they're old enough to cross the street, they're old enough to go to Johnny or Sally or Paul's house, and there might be firearms there that aren't properly secured. And like I said, the last thing you want is a curious child around the firearm. So we really need to embrace firearm education. We need to embrace the ability for law-abiding citizens to have access to firearms and to firearm training. I mean, here's the crazy thing. I heard Sheriff Clark was talking about this, about why he's not going to attend the International Chiefs of Police Association. I was at the conference, too. And Obama, one thing that a lot of people didn't pick up on is one thing he said was, in the city of Chicago, it's easier for a child to purchase a gun than a book.
Yeah.
And he said this in front of intelligent people. I mean, I just don't see how that could even come out of his mouth. Such a ridiculous statement as that.
Well, this is, you know, I think this is part of where the anti-gun movement is right now, is that they, I don't think they can be honest with themselves,
right.
Much less the American people. They can't be honest about what their end goal would look like. They can't be honest about, I mean, again, they won't admit that they're anti-gun.
No.
They're just in favor of gun safety, but gun safety without ranges, gun safety, right? You know, so I think that there's a fundamental problem right now within the anti-gun movement where they need to be honest with themselves before they can be honest with the American people. Chip, listen, we got to have you back on the program.
I'm looking forward to it. I hope I do get to see you.
Absolutely. I'm sorry we didn't have more time, but we'll have you back on again very, very soon. And if folks want more information, if they're in Illinois, they want to learn more about Top Shot Academy,
where can they
find you?
They can find us at topshotacademy.com. We're at Cabela's now. We're also in the city, 17 North State, so... You know, we've got classes all the time, and we love law-abiding citizens.
That is fantastic, man. Thanks for all that you do, Chip.
Thank you.
Great to meet you in person, sir.
Cam.
Chip Eberhardt with us here on NRA News, Cam and Company from SHOT Show 2016. Still to come, Scott Laceth, the sporting chef, and our good friend will be with us on the program. He's right over there. How are you, sir? Plus, we've got Mark Wills, country star, coming up at the end of the hour right now. know, we have a good guy segment on the program each and every day. Well, here is a real-life good guy. Major Ed Polito is with us from the Folds of Honor Foundation. Major, it's good to see you again, sir.
Man, what a great day to be an American.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just excited. Look, at when you get to come here, this is freedom right here.
Right.
And you get to see all of the great things that are, all the great people, all the great items that are here, and certainly the hardware, man. I tell you what, it doesn't get better than that. And this is about the USA, baby.
Yeah, in Vegas. That's right. So tell me, for folks who haven't been able to catch you on the program before, those few Americans out there who still are unaware of the Folds of Honor Foundation, what does this organization do?
Well, the Folds of Honor Foundation was started by Major Dan Rooney, and as a co-founder of the organization, I've been with Major Dan on this mission for about 8 years. We give scholarships to the families that have fallen and wounded, but we've awarded over 10,000 scholarships. This year, we'll probably do another 2,500 to deserving military families, honoring the sacrifice, educating the legacy, and providing healing and support for these wounded service members that come back and are disabled and that they need that hope and that support. And I think, you know, NRA News has been with us from day one, and, you know, we've got so many great sponsors that are part of it. Here just in the show, you know, Colt Bushnell, got 511 Tactical down there. We're going to do a book signing at 2:30 this afternoon at the 511 Tactical booth, and we're just spreading the message about freedom and sacrifice and the Folds of Honor.
You know, and it's so important, especially for those of us who never wore the uniform and we never served. We have, I think, an obligation to help those who have. And, you know, I never wore the uniform, but my dad was in the Navy in World War II. My brother was in the Army during Desert Storm, was in Korea at the time. And I've lived around military families, and I've gotten to see firsthand not only how the soldier or the sailor or the airman, how they are impacted, but how their entire families are making sacrifices each and every day. And when we're talking about our wounded warriors, you know, those families, they're going through so much that it's easy for us to forget, right? We don't see the news stories every day anymore about our soldiers in Iraq or Afghanistan. In fact, our special ops guys, you know, they work very quietly. And
Correct.
So we're not supposed to see the headlines, but they're there. And they are serving, and we need to serve them. So what can we do to get involved with Folds of Honor?
Well, people can go to foldsofhonor.org and get involved. They can also do a lot of buy the products that we have out here. The other thing I will tell you is that as you serve this great nation, and as I put on the nation's uniform, lost my leg, almost lost my life, I always think about, you know what, I did what I did to preserve freedom in this nation, and for all of us in this nation to have everything that we've got, to live and have a great quality of life. And you just explained that to us, to your listenership. You know, it's about honoring that sacrifice, but more importantly, about making sure that around the world that they know the United States of America is nobody to be messing around with, because at the end of the day, our people stand up for freedom.
Now, okay, so to that end, I want to ask you something as Major Ed Polito, not with the Folds of Honor Foundation, but just Major Ed Polito for a second. How concerned are you that that America's enemies are starting to get a different message, that maybe we can be pushed around a little bit?
Well, I got to tell you that we cannot sit around and let people push us around. And I am a big advocate. In my book, Warrior for Freedom, I wrote about Ronald Reagan and his message to the world that, you know what, not only are you going to tear that wall down, but if you do something and you get out of line, we're going to bust you up. And I got to tell you, that's the way I look at things. You know, we cannot sit around in this world that's so negative with ISIS doing what they're doing. And then, of course, them kind of infiltrating our country and then this refugee problem and all of this. And our leadership, our poor leadership, not understanding that at the end of the day, it's not about saying that individuals can't come here and follow the American dream. It's about making sure that when you come here, you learn not only our language, our customs, but you live as an American. And I got to tell you, the culture, I'm Colombian and Puerto Rican. My father was an immigrant. I truly understand that the red, white, and blue shines bright because people like him, a Vietnam-era vet, took that oath of office to love his country, to love his family, and to have faith in God. And I think that's the elements of who we are in this nation.
Major Ed Polito with the Folds of Honor Foundation. I could talk to you all day.
Baby. I love it, baby. Come on now.
Yeah. Are you going to be here all week?
You know what? I am. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm so humbly honored. As I walked through, it took me a while to get here. I didn't know I knew that many people.
Oh, buddy.
But my story has resonated. And I will tell you, a lot of people were saying, you're a hero. You know, I'm not a hero. The heroes are the ones that lose their lives. The heroes are those special operators. The heroes are Rob O'Neill's, who get Bin Laden and bust those people up every day. And you know what? If I can do my part in the United States of America, I will. I love all you. God bless America. Hoorah!
Well, let me tell you, Major. Listen, the only thing that you did not get right in that statement is that you are a hero.
Oh,
and I know
you.
That you would never call yourself that. Heroes don't. But let me tell you, from where I sit, you, sir, are definitely a
thank
hero.
You.
And it is such an honor to have you on the program. Every time I get a chance to talk with you, you make me feel better
you
about
gotta
the future,
you got to get your fix, right?
Exactly.
NRA News, baby. Come on now. Hey, good luck on the program and everything you do. And, you know, all your workers here, man, I got to tell you, it's a total team effort, isn't it?
It absolutely
is. And in the military,
is.
That's how we do it, too. So.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I hope we get a chance to see you again soon. And,
okay.
And thanks for everything that you do, Major.
Okay. Good luck. Hoorah.
Yeah, hoorah.
All right.
Major Ed Polito with the Folds of Honor Foundation. Joining us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. We got to take a quick time out. When we come back, Scott Laceth, the sporting chef, will join us on the program. Mark Wills, country star extraordinaire, is going to join us in just a little bit as well. Stick around. We've got more coverage from SHOT Show 2016 coming up right after this here on NRA News, Cam and Company.
Speaking with Jim Sapieca, director of the NRA Museums. Jim, in this installment, we want to talk about the NRA National Sporting Arms Museum. Tell us what it's all about.
Well, that is the newest of our three museums. We have the NRA National Firearms Museum here at NRA headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. The NRA National Sporting Arms Museum was opened 2 years ago at the Bass Pro Shops in Springfield, Missouri, and it is a spectacular museum. There are about 1,000 historic arms there, and of course, as you'd guess, there's an emphasis on sporting arms, the arms of hunting, of sport shooting. But it goes far, far beyond that. We have exhibits that include guns of the Old West. We've got some great new guns that are just coming in and will be on display soon. Bat Masterson, Bass Reeves, who is a very iconic Old West figure. The first African-American U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi, and one of the most prolific lawmen of the Old West in terms of number of arrests, number of gunfights, a remarkable Old West figure that has been mostly overlooked until just the past few years. That museum, the really gratifying thing about that museum is the attendance. We just hit a milestone, opened 2 years and 2 months, and we have had 700,000 people through that museum. And so it's almost 1,000 a day. Yeah.
Oh.
And the demographics there, we get a lot of families, a lot of, you know, mom, dad, and the kids coming through.
Right.
And it's just great. And you see the parents pointing out the different things to the kids, and then the kids taking them by the hand and saying, come over here and see this.
How do we get more info about that museum?
That museum, all the NRA museums are at the website, nramuseums.com, or you can go visit the museum in Springfield, Missouri at the Bass Pro headquarters shop there. It's open every day of the year except Christmas, and admission is always free at all three of the NRA museums.
Speaking with Dan Caparelli with Hire Our Heroes. Dan, welcome to NRA News. Tell us, what is Hire Our Heroes?
Yeah, so Hire Our Heroes is a nonprofit organization that basically helps transitioning veterans to position themselves for employment as they get out of the service.
Why'd you start this, Dan?
I served in the Marine Corps Reserves, and after 8 years, I got out thinking I had this great skill set. I was a satellite communications specialist, and shortly thereafter, long story short, there was really no opportunity for me to really find employment or anybody to help me find employment. So I felt like I was on an island by myself, and I thought if I couldn't be the only veteran going through this, that there was probably a need for a greater reach. And lo and behold, I gathered a few other veterans, and we formed Hire Our Heroes, basically founded by veterans for veterans.
That is great. So what's the reaction been to Hire Our Heroes?
you know, it's been phenomenal. It's one of those things, be careful what you wish for. The response has been overwhelming at times, but it has been nothing short of great and rewarding at the same time. There's nothing but opportunity for us to help veterans. And believe it or not, there's a lot of nonprofits out there, and these veterans still have a tough time really finding the right one that's going to bring them down the path to success as they transition out.
Dan Cap-
we feel like we've got a pretty cool tool set to do that.
Awesome. Dan Caprari with Hire Heroes. How can folks get more information about the great work you're doing and your great organization?
Visit us on the web at hireourheroes.org, and they can fill out information on whether or not they're interested in transitioning, reaching for somebody to reach out for them to connect, as well as some of our other services and that we offer.
Dan Caprari, thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being on NRA News.
You are listening to NRA News Cam and Company, coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada, and the 2016 Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show at the Sands Convention Center. Very pleased to have with us on the program right now Scott Laseth of the Sporting Chef on the Sportsman Channel. I'm sorry, John, I'm hearing that echo again. If you could get rid of that for me. Thank you very much. Scott, how are you, sir?
Good to see you. How's your cooking skills? Have they improved?
Well, there is a, you know, it's a low bar, so there's there's lots of room for improvement. So, yes, I would like to think that they have gotten a little bit better, but I guess maybe in a couple weeks in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, maybe I can, you can put them to the test.
I think we'll give you a couple more lessons in Harrisburg.
Yeah.
Any particular thing you'd like to cook while I'm there? And I can make it happen. What are you short on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'll have to think about that.
Maybe I'll bring up
some of my bacon this time around.
Excellent. What's wrong with bacon?
Nothing, from what I can tell, right?
Everything goes with bacon.
Exactly. So how are you doing?
Good. Fifth season of Sporting Chef is on. We've got some new people and some of our regulars, like Melissa Bachman, who you know. And, you know, it's kind of cool. I'm on my own show for about maybe 6.5 minutes now. And I think what I realize is that people like watching other people besides me, maybe. But we've got a couple of gals from Food Network that are doing segments on the show. We have Susie Jimenez, who is the runner-up on Season 7 Next Food Network Star, whatever
okay.
it is, and a couple other gals who, they hunt, they cook wild game. I'm actually going to be at Aspen Food and Wine doing a wild game event during Aspen Food and Wine. We're going to show them. We're going to get them out of the high-dollar area, and we're going to get them over there and show them how to cook a wild pig.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So we do seem to continue to see this this pairing, if you will, right, of gun ownership and hunting, and even just going to the range and having fun.
Sure.
Along with the culinary side. I mean, we've talked about this many times before with you. I was actually just listening to an old podcast of Andrew Zimmern, and he was interviewing Alton Brown. And they didn't bring up guns while they were talking, but we've had Andrew on the program before.
Sure,
I know that Alton
guy.
Brown is a concealed carry holder. I mean, it almost seems like if you scratch a chef, you're going to find a gun owner.
Well, and it's part of the whole process. Chefs understand, real chefs understand the whole where our food comes from. And so, you know, even if they're not necessarily good at it, most of the ones that I know at some point want to go out, if they haven't already, and they want to shoot a deer, they want to kill some ducks, and they want to see where our food comes from. It's kind of the natural deal. It's not raised in shrink wrap packages.
Right. Now, listen, since you and I have talked, I have butchered a hog.
Right.
I have butchered a sheep. So I've started learning the butchering process.
Right.
And it's actually really fascinating to me. Like, I'm so into this now. I love taking, you know, really, I mean, it's you know, it's hanging right there and,
right.
and turning it into pork chops and loin. And, I mean, that to me is really, really cool. How you break down. I think I'd like to be a butcher at some point.
And the more you do it, I mean, it's really fascinating when you see somebody who does it every day and how fast they can break down an animal.
Yeah, right.
And they don't leave a whole lot behind. And so I'm sure by the time you get to the next, by the time you get to your 10th pig, you will have learned a whole lot more, and you'll get a lot more yield out of your pig. And the cool thing about it is, even if you leave some scraps behind on the bone, you roast those bones, and that's going to be soup anyway. You're not going to waste anything.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, you know, you talk about the efforts that we see chefs take here to learn more about the food that they're making.
Right.
As they're doing that, are they also learning more about how to make food?
One of the things that, we preach on the show is to make use of the whole animal. And that's what chefs do.
Now, like the whole animal?
Well, there's a few parts I'll leave behind that Andrew Zimmern might
actually...
Because
I've seen some crazy stuff.
Well, you know, Andrew Zimmern, he's in the nether regions. And,
right.
And so I'm not there. However, you know, I was in Denver last week doing seminars for this group. And I was asking people how many people just breast out their pheasants and throw the rest away. And it was like, yeah. And those pheasant legs and thighs, if you roast them, if you roast the carcasses, pheasant legs are so stringy, right? The pheasant legs, really tough, very fibrous, just like a wild turkey. Mm-hmm. You braise those. So you're going to put some, you're going to brown them, then you're going to go low heat, a little bit of liquid, covered, 325 degrees for about 3 or 4 hours, and you'll be able to pull that meat off. Then you make stock out of whatever's in that roasting pan, and you're using the whole animal. I'm telling you, whether it's a duck or a deer or whatever, way too many people waste too much of their animal, and that's what we're trying to get across. Save those deer shanks. They're delicious. Don't cut them into little pieces and feed them to the dog.
Oh, no, I can attest to the deliciousness of the deer shanks because I think
we did some last year, right? That's right, out in Farmville.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm really glad you got a chance to come by. When can folks check out the Sporting Chef?
Sunday, 12:30 Eastern is our prime time.
Okay.
It's on a few other times during the week, but you can go to the Sportsman Channel website and check out Sporting Chef, and the times are always posted. We're on 52 weeks a year, and we've got some very cool people. You know what I tell people? If you don't like who you're watching, just wait about a minute and a half, and you're going to see somebody else. Short attention span cooking.
One of these days, my culinary skills will be up to par, and then maybe you'll see me on for 90 seconds.
We'll take you anytime we can get you.
I'm working. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm working on it.
Well, you know, it's TV. We can fake it. We can make it look good.
Scott, it is always a pleasure.
Good to see you, man.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
We'll talk again soon. Scott Lathis.
All right.
Lisa Thea, Sporting Chef, with us here on NRA News Cam and Company. Now, Mark Wills is going to join us after a quick timeout. So stick around. We have much more NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler and our on-location sponsor, Accor Defense, coming up right after this.
Speaking with Louis Crudo with Crudo Knives. Louis, welcome to NRA News. Tell me, what is Crudo Knives?
Crudo Knives is all about tools. Whether it's everyday carry bags to knives to paint compliance tools.
So when I came over your table, we almost did the interview, Louis, and I had to stop you because we started with the pink gadget back there, and I said, what is that? Because I know it's not a knife. Can you explain to us how you did to me what that's all about?
Absolutely. It's Snag. Snag is a concept I came up with. It's an S-shaped tool, and it comes in a folder, a fixed blade, or a polymer. And the entire purpose of that is not only as a training tool, no edge, no point, but also a paint compliance. So you take it out of your pocket, and every part of that tool is meant to, you know, paint compliance, which is very important because it's less than lethal.
So you said you can push somebody with it, pull somebody.
Let me show you.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'm going to grab the pink one.
Yeah, go ahead. Yes. My daughter will love it.
All right. This is the pink polymer, and it's just a standard shape, S shape. But the beauty about this is that you can use it to train, but with the tool itself, by applying it in specific areas and minimal amount of strength, meaning that a 200-pound person can use it, a 100-pound person can use it, I can apply it anywhere in your body and create the effect that I need. So that is the intent of this tool. We move on to something that's foldable, like the snack folder, and now this has multiple parts to it. You have a thumb support, which puts your hand into that ergonomic position. And that's where you want to be comfortable. This is trained. This is normal. And again, I can use that tool and any part of the tool to create enough pain to make you go, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? Now, if I open the entire tool, now the entire S shape is there. The beauty about the lever, which I call thumb support, is that I can put a little bit of pressure from it and create maximum amount of pain at the tip. And this is no edge, no point tool. So that is Snag folder. Wow. That's how they started. I'm sorry. That's how the company started.
That is so cool. It's such a novel thing. I've not seen that before. And so you guys offer that. And then you have a couple other neat things over here I wanted to take a look at. One for my buddy Dennis, one of our cameramen, is your tomahawk there. What do you call that?
This is called a catchet. And it's a hatchet, a crudo catchet. So the entire purpose of this...
go ahead, pick it up.
Okay, great. Yeah. Now, this is a live edge, all right? So it's very sharp. And as you can see, this is not your typical axe grind. It has a hollow grind that you would find in most knives. So it's not meant to basically go out there and chop a tree. It's very specific. So the entire shape is ergonomic, meaning that I can basically choke up on it. And if I have to julienne... I can julienne, but if I have to protect, it does cover the shape of my forearm. So let's flip it around. If I use it in this position and I have it inside my sheath, I can use this as a club if I had to beat on if necessary. The point is specifically made so it can be a prying tool. The hook on the back is not only to hook whatever is necessary, but also not to lose my tool if I have to change positions. And at the same time, it looks cool.
Wow, that's awesome. So that's Louis Crudo with Crudo Knives. And the last thing before we run out of time, I'd love to tell me, but you showed me this too, the baby and the daddy, two knives.
This is becoming one of our favorites. Let's start with the Cesura. The Cesura, as you can see, has a nice, interesting shape. Everything that I built is practical. I want it to feel good in my hand, whether it's in a spear position or in a nice pick position. It looks nice, very, very thick. As you can see, it's 3/8 of an inch. All right, so then if we make a big one, why not make something for smaller, female-oriented, you know, hopefully that it can carry in their purse, but it doesn't, it's unisex no matter what. And what you see here in this little one, you can see that it has scalloped handles. You can open it kinetically with a flipper. You can open it, can you take a double take on that one? You can open it with a flick. You can open it scissor movement. Or if you have to, plug it in, out of the pocket. Oh. And this is called IOTA. IOTA buy this knife.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Awesome. All right. So before we run out of time, Louis, tell me how can folks get more information about Crudo Knives?
They can go directly to our website, which is www.crudoknives.com. Crudo with a K. Okay. Or you can write an email, info@crudoknives.com, and our telephone number is 727-753-8455.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, coming to you from the 2016 SHOT Show. Man, I am so thrilled that with us on the program tonight, Mark Wills is with us. Mark, how are you, man?
I'm good, brother. How are you doing?
I am excellent. We were talking during the break. This is not your first rodeo, SHOT Show rodeo, is it?
I think I'm up to about 12, maybe more, 12 SHOT Shows, which is just, it's incredible because, you know, I love the gun industry. I love the this entire experience. It's always a lot of fun. You and I were talking. We go back to the days of when it flip-flopped between Orlando and Vegas here.
Right.
And so it's been a lot of fun. We've had a great time.
And to see, you know, not just this event, but to see the industry grow.
Yes.
And, you know, you look back, I mean, even 10 years ago, you know, we've just seen such an explosive growth in terms of who is getting interested in the outdoors.
It's amazing at, you know, when we start talking about freedoms being taken away and we start talking about different, you know, different aspects of our world, how so many people either they run from one direction or the other. They either run, you know, totally run away from it or they run toward it. Mm-hmm. And it's been something that I've been able to witness for the last, you know, decade. Are the influx of people that really get involved and really love the gun industry and love the technology side of it and you know they stay involved. It's been really neat.
Yeah, and I mean it really has been. And so let's talk about you mentioned the technology aspect of this.
Yeah.
So this is something that comes up all the time, right?
Okay.
In the gun control debate. Why do you need these modern battlefield weapons of war, right? That's how they describe the AR platform or any semi-automatic rifle or pistol.
Correct.
It is a modern battlefield weapon of war. To me, it's kind of like asking, well, why do you need a CD We've got those Edison wax cylinders, Mark. Why do you need to record, you know, albums so that they can be released digitally when you just have a Victrola?
Well, I don't even make CDs anymore. We go to iTunes. So I mean, that's exactly, you're making a great point. That's something that we've dealt with for a long time. You know, the technology on our side, and now you're getting to see, you know, some of this great technology implemented on the gun side as well. I think it's awesome. But I think I love my ARs. You know, we don't do a lot of hunting with our ARs, but you know, but we pig hunt and varmint hunt and mm-hmm. stuff like that. You know, most of the rifles that we hunt with are bolt guns, but I love all guns. I really do. Ever since I got my first .22 rifle when I was 5 years old for Christmas, it was a Sears and Roebuck .22, and I still have it to this day. And I've fallen in love with the gun world from the time I was a child, and now I'm raising my children. I just took my 13-year-old daughter, who's my youngest daughter, took her for her very first whitetail hunt. She harvested a really nice whitetail. And our reason for hunting is a little different. Our reason for hunting is that my youngest daughter has a dietary issue, that her body doesn't process fat. And that's really how we got into the hunting world, was not being able to go to your grocery store and buy meat, beef, mm-hmm. pork, you know, anything like that she could eat because of the fat content. So it's opened up a lot of doors for me and for her to be able to experience some wonderful outdoor time together that has opened her world to being, you know, in love with hunting,
right,
and in love with harvesting her own food.
And I mean, what an invaluable lesson to learn at an early age, you know, that,
yeah.
you know, you don't have to let this be a hindrance to you or
right.
a hurdle to you. As a matter of fact, this can be a learning experience. You can become a better person because of this challenge.
We have both learned a lot. We have both learned an extreme amount about the outdoor world, about, you know, how you know, a lot of people, they classify hunters as, you know, people that just go out to kill something. And one of the main reasons, one of the main lessons that I taught my daughter right off the bat was harvesting mature animals, not going out and pulling the trigger at the first thing you see. And she learned that lesson on her very first elk hunt. We went to New Mexico, and elk is something that she can eat. Bison is something that she can eat. Venison is something she can eat because of the very, very low fat content mm-hmm. in the meat. And so, we, you know, she went out. And, you know, and she watches a hunting show and she thinks, hey, man, 22 minutes into this, we got something on the ground and we're on a plane heading back home. Right. And so 4 days into it, and she's like, am I going to get an elk? And we're like, yeah, darling, you gotta calm down. We're going to make this happen. And that was one of the main lessons that she learned off of her first hunt.
Patience
and harvesting the right animal.
Right.
Not just pulling the trigger as soon as something walks out there. So you can say, I killed an elk, or I killed, you know, a deer or whatever.
And you said that so you posted a picture of your daughter recently, and you said you were getting grief online. I mean, everybody gets grief online for everything, it seems, these days. So don't take it personally, Mark.
Keyboard bullies, man.
But, right? Let me tell you how to live your life.
Yeah.
But what were they? I mean, who, after you explaining this story,
yeah.
who on earth would have a problem with
people that don't read?
Apparently.
People that see a picture of a 13-year-old girl with a deer that she's harvested and jumping on and, you know, saying, oh, she's a murderer, you're a murderer, you're teaching your children, you know, your horrible lessons that you're teaching your kids, and those don't bother me. The ones that bother me are when people say things like, you're a country music singer, you should go to the grocery store and buy your food just like everybody else does. You shouldn't be out killing these animals. And I go, really? You mean you think
let somebody else do it?
You know, I don't grasp it.
It's you know, I think for a lot of people it's avoidance. They don't want to think about where the food comes from.
I agree.
And you know, like, look, I mean, the first time we butchered one of our hogs, it kind of sucked, Mark. I mean, like,
yeah.
this is an animal that I had raised and
drew up,
and
I had a Leroy. We had cows that we named,
right?
And we had pigs that we would name,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it was time for Leroy to not be in the barn anymore. It was time for Leroy to be in the freezer.
Right.
And that's tough. And there's a lot of people that you're exactly right. There's a lot of people that don't want to deal with that side of it. They want to eat when it's time to eat. They want to go to the freezer and take their meat out of the cellophane.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to know where it actually comes from. And I think that's the worst thing in the world. I love knowing where my food comes from.
I do too. And this is a pretty recent development because I grew up in the suburbs. So I mean, I was that, you know, ignorance is bliss,
right?
Mentality. But actually, what really is blissful is, as you say, knowing where your food comes from. Like, you know, when I pull out a pork chop from our freezer, I know it came from Pork Chop.
Right. Right? There you go.
And
exactly.
You know, and it really opens your eyes to so much because you realize what goes into every one of your meals.
You realize the circle of life. You realize that you go out and you're hunting and you're sitting in the woods and you see a deer that is walking through. And that deer has never been caged. That deer was never, you know, abused. It lived its entire life, you know, existing on the land.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a good, clean harvest, a quick harvest. And you take that and you honor that animal by, you know, by having it processed, by having all the meat taken and using it. And I don't think there's a better way to honor anything that you're going to take. You honor it by consuming it. You honor it by, you know, by feeding your family with it. And I think that's the coolest thing that you can do as a hunter, as an outdoorsman, is to do it that way. I'm not a big fan, and I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm not a big fan of trophy hunting. I don't like to shoot something to hang it on the wall. I personally choose to harvest animals that I'm going to eat, that my family are going to eat. And that's the way for me and my family that I feel it what works best for us.
We're talking with Mark Wills, country star, and tell us, what do you have on tap for 2016?
2016 is a good year because I have recently been picked up to host Remington Country's television show.
Nice.
So I'm going to be the new host of Remington Country along with Courtney, who is sort of a female hunter. She and I are going to go back and forth with guiding hunts, with doing different things. And 2016 is Remington's 200th anniversary, so it's a big year for Remington Firearms as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We've been filming a good bit, been down in Louisiana and different places doing hunts. I got to take my 13-year-old daughter on a whitetail hunt. She had never hunted whitetail before, so we got to do that. And it's been an extremely pleasurable December and January. And as soon as I leave SHOT Show, I'm heading right back there to you know, to finish up hunting season.
That is awesome. So I got to ask, because it's kind of award season right now in Hollywood. We got all this stuff going on. And, you know, we were in Nashville for the annual meeting last year.
Yes,
and
sir. I saw you. I waved.
I waved. Right? And, man, that was such an amazing experience. Is the country music world, is it more Second Amendment friendly? Is it more hunter-friendly than, let's say, L.A.? I mean, is there really a difference? Because it's the same industry.
Well, I mean,
it's the entertainment industry. But
I can tell you that, yes, I believe so. I mean, you have both sides in any industry. You know, I know that Blake's a hunter. I know that Miranda's a hunter. I know that Luke's a hunter. And Jason, all of those guys, I know that all of them hunt. I mean, you know, they're on TV shows. Luke and Jason are both buck commander, I believe. At least they were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think so. I mean, I think that we all enjoy it. We're all, the majority of country music entertainers, the one big thing that they have in common is a lot of them are from the country.
Right.
And we've grown up with that lifestyle. I myself grew up in the country, but I was never a hunter. I didn't become a hunter until probably 6-7 years ago, when I went out and did like a wounded warrior hunt with some special operations soldiers. I was asked to go and hunt with them and just enjoy a week with some of our nation's finest warriors.
That's a pretty cool introduction to hunting.
It was amazing. It was an elk hunt. I went. I fell in love with it. I was like, I can't believe I'm a 36-year-old man who's never done this. And I jumped in, you know, just over my head and jumped in and just absolutely loved it. And now, you know, here I am a few years later and I'm getting to host a hunting show and I'm getting to sort of teach a younger generation or, you know, my children's age generation about the love of the outdoors and about the appreciation and how we can all learn and we can all, you know, sort of, you know, the conservation side of it, with the marksmanship side of it, with the, you know, doing the right thing, being an ethical hunter, and all those lessons that go into the outdoor world and especially the hunting world.
That is awesome, man.
It's been awesome.
From not hunting at all to hosting your own show in like 7 years.
I'm an eater. That's all I'll say. I'm an eater. So, you know, I figure if I'm going to eat it, I gotta at some point go get it.
Right. Now, is there anything that you want to try that you haven't tasted yet? Like any sort of game that you'd like to take? And
you know, I've never moose hunted. I've never had the opportunity to moose hunt. I would love to do that. I would love to go up to Alaska. I love Alaska. It's one of my favorite places that I've ever visited throughout my entire career. I played a couple shows up in Alaska last year, took my mom and dad, my wife, and my two daughters, and we just made a vacation out of work for me in Alaska. I would love to go moose hunting. I've eaten bear. I've eaten pretty much everything. You know, I'm not one of those people that I don't freak out. You know, put it on a plate. And don't even tell me what it is. I'll just eat it, and if I like it, I'm like, yeah, that's good. And if I don't, then I'm like, maybe not. Maybe, you know, maybe that's not what I want to eat.
Right.
But I don't really judge it like that. I'm just, you know, fat guy. Man, I'll eat anything.
Yeah, Mark Willis calls himself fat, and that means
No, not point a finger. Just
I'm
saying,
Just
saying, I could be a little smaller than I'm a little bigger than I used to be, and you know, in girth. Wise, you know, in this area right here.
Yeah, just stop, buddy. It's not working. We're talking with Mark Wills. So, where can we catch you on TV, and where can we catch you on the road? You're gonna be doing some touring all.
Gonna be doing the touring. Probably the next show that we have coming up. We're in Central City, Colorado, here in a couple weeks. You know, markwills.com. That's my website. All of the social media platforms are Mark Wills Music. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those, you know, Mark Wills Music. And yeah, we're going to be all over. This summer will be a lot, you know, we'll be a lot more busy. This is the kind of year, time of the year where we slow down and spend a lot of family time together. And mm-hmm. I've done none of that because I've been hunting the whole time and all, but it'll be good. We'll have a good 2016. We'll be on the Pursuit Channel with Remington Country. I believe this new season comes in June or July,
okay,
somewhere like that. So they're working on getting that out there, and you know, we're just around. Follow us. We'll keep you updated on what's going on in our world.
That's awesome, man. I hope it's a great year for you, Mark. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank y'all for having us. We look forward to doing it again.
Anytime, man.
Absolutely.
Mark Wills with us here on NRA News, Cam & Company, and unfortunately, we're almost out of time for today's program, but the good news is it is only Tuesday, and we'll be here all week long from the 2016 SHOT Show. I would tell you who we have coming up tomorrow, but all of this is subject to change, and I'll just tell you it's going to be a fantastic program. Live 2 p.m. Eastern, on demand all the time, on iHeartRadio, and on the new NRA News Roku channel as well. Thanks so much for being a part of this edition of NRA News Cam & Company, sponsored by Nosler. And thanks again to our on-location sponsor, AdCorps Defense. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of NRA News Cam & Company.